And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, the 13th of November edition, 2005. 3.5 hours, or who knows what, maybe more. Lots of street interviews, lots of follow-up, and hopefully you'll follow up too. Stay tuned.
She says my ass hurts when I sit down. She says my feet hurt when I'm standing around. I think my body is as restless as my mind, and I don't know if I can roll with it this time. She packed his uniforms and drove him to the base. She was crying all the way, the world looked her in the face and said, roll with it, baby, make it your career. Keep the home fires burning till America is in the clear. With lies. Once you are wet, it's so hard to get dry. We are all taught how to justify his story as it passes by. And yes, it's your world that comes crashing down when the big boys want to throw their weight around. But just roll with it, baby. Make it your career. Keep the home fires burning till America is in the clear. Behind tinted windows, they just drive by. And all I know is that those that are going to be killed aren't those that preside on Capitol Hill. I told him, don't fill the front lines of their war. Those assholes aren't worth dying for. And he said, roll with it, baby. Make it your career. Keep the home fire burning till America is in the clear. Roll with it, baby. Make it your career. Keep the home fire's burning till America is in the clear. Just roll with it, baby. Make it your career. Keep the home fire's burning till America is in the clear. But she says my ass hurts when I sit down. She says my feet hurt when I'm standing around. I think my body is as restless as my mind, and I'm not gonna roll with it this time. No, I'm not gonna roll with it this time. No, I'm not gonna roll with it this time.
Well, it's about 7:15 on Friday evening, November 11th, Veterans Day on Pacific Avenue, and down here at the stand of Jason Pascal. He's wearing a dark-looking cowboy hat. The evening is mellow and mild, and he's got a sign, which looks similar to one he's had earlier. Again, concerned about the harassment of... well, we're... A psychic reading without a metaphysical permit apparently is against the city ordinance. Any recent harassment, Jason?
No, not recently. No, not recently. They've been just like staying away from me just the way I want them to. was to stay away from me. I see that little ham Bechtel over there. You know, and she's just like, you know, just like, it looks like a bratwurst or something. I don't know what the fuck.
Rottweiler, perhaps?
I don't know.
Or bratwurst. I don't know what to say. Tonight is actually follows the safe 93rd performance of the musical performers. Oh, yeah. Pam and I guess could be Officer Wendy or perhaps another officer. And some of the hosts are approaching here. Apparently they converge on your table, or this is where they meet.
Double duty at every
strategic point. It's like strategic.
But they're leaving you alone.
Yeah, they're leaving me alone. They're leaving me alone.
So,
they're scared of me now.
I heard any reports of harassment of performers downtown? Because there was apparently an incident that happened on Wednesday night at the SAFE event where the cops were harassing the SAFE performers.
I have no idea about that, Robert. I haven't heard about it.
Well, that's good. Maybe that's not been happening much.
What they're going to do, they're going to start coming up, they're going to start testing it. Yeah, they can get away with it as long as they can.
Well, I think it's good you're standing up for yourself, Jason, and keep us posted as to what's going down.
I will, Robert.
Thank you. And we have the music of Suspiring Susan here. How's it going, Susan?
I'm playing a bluesy banjo.
Indeed. In front of, I guess it's Dale Williams and its extended store. I think we need to lay a coin or two on you for your good work. Looks like you may be preempted by the traveling piano.
The traveling piano?
Well, yeah.
Well, it's worth its while.
Indeed. So how is the Friday night crowd? Any interesting people passing by?
No comment.
No hassles.
You.
Well, thank you very much. Are you feeling hassled?
Probably the most interesting person was you.
Oh, well, thank you. I know...
I was playing with the protest group up at the top because they had all of their... And I got the banjo up because I thought the banjo was appropriate. So I played Bobby Dylan's Masters of War while they were waving their banners. And there I did have a few honks.
When was this?
They played until about... 7, almost 6:30.
And where, this was here at the Veterans Hall?
Over here.
Oh, the anti-war group in front of the theater, the Cinema 9.
I thought that was very nice to do for the Veterans Day celebration.
Dig it.
I would say that was probably the more highlight of the night on the mall. I can't imagine anything else being any more exciting than that.
How many performers were there?
Well, I was the only one that was playing the banjo and singing protest music because I think nobody else was there. They didn't know that there was anything happening. And so it was just like all the others were. There were about 10 to maybe at least 10 people out there with the signs just standing there doing a silent vigil.
Any war sign.
Yes. They left.
Against the Iraqi occupation.
Yes. They seemed to be very happy that I came. And I definitely gave it my all.
Well, keep it up. Thanks, Sue.
You're welcome. That was good.
And welcome to Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, also freakradio.org if you're listening on the Internet. Our phone line is experiencing a little difficulty. For example, we hear a dial tone at the same time as I hear you, last caller, but... we can take brief calls, I imagine, and who knows, maybe we can find some way out of it in case there's a techie wandering in the area. The phone number here is 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC, because we are Free Radio Santa Cruz, or Freak Radio Santa Cruz, as some call it, or Control Freak Radio Santa Cruz, as some critics call us, and I have occasionally called the station in fits of despair and rage. You can call us whatever you want, but call us, 427-3772. I'm Robert Norse, and this is a 3.5-hour show on Sunday mornings. It has to do with civil rights in Santa Cruz, or lack thereof. Also cover kind of mobilizing protest activity on a variety of issues, such as the violent criminal occupation of Iraq by foreign invaders. That's the United States government and its so-called allies. The foreign fighters, of whom there are more than 160,000 occupying the distant land of Iraq. And it's something, of course, needs to be ended yesterday and never begun. Instead, we have tepid Democrats babbling with rabid Republicans and quiescent activists. So it looks like activism may be stepping up. As I look at the Indie Media website, about which there's been various controversies, but first what's appearing on them, help stop the war in Iraq Friday, November 18th, 3 to 5. That's coming up this week. Enough is enough. It is time to say no louder and stronger to the war and Bush regime and so forth. But on this occasion, there's a Santa Cruz County action, according to this announcement. It's going to be at the Military Recruitment Center on 41st Avenue, 2121 41st, from 3 to 5, which is a public sidewalk near the recruiting center on the right-hand side of the frontage road next to Highway 1, across from the Master Car Wash. That's actually next to Highway 1 and Claire Street. I believe we're talking about the same place where I and 12 others got arrested in 2003 for standing in front of the center. This is, it looks like, a less lower profile activity, simply demonstrating along the public sidewalk. So hopefully we won't get arrested and harassed like the Capitola Mall protesters were harassed when they attempted to exercise their First Amendment rights under the Prunyard decision, which you can also read about on Indie Media. Interesting decision. I understand it's been weakened, according to my legal sources, but still allows people to protest in shopping malls. You have access rights to shopping malls, even though they're nominally private. They're actually large public centers where people converge and so forth. So it's not the same as going to a mom-and-pop grocery and taking over the area that way, nor do protesters usually take over the area. I wish they did on more occasions. It seems like the military has taken over the area for the last 2 years, or actually for the last God knows how many decades, but it's been active for the last 2 years. We're murdering abroad because the military is in control here, I should say, those of a military mindset who run the Congress as well as the actual on-the-ground military in Iraq. Anyway, this is next Friday, November 18th, 3 to 5, out at the Capitola Military Recruitment Center, 41st Avenue, 2121. I think it's right before the first burger joint, if you're a burger man, which I occasionally am, though I kind of avoid the fast food joints, have for a while. But I think it's right near the Burger King on the corner. You head a little bit toward the freeway, and you'll see people on the sidewalk 3 to 5. They also request you bring large signs that are easy to read by those passing by, photos and posters that show the dead and injured, ours and theirs, gongs, chimes, and simple hand drums to beat to a slow dirge. Wear black or red if you can, they advise. I'll have a handbill with current stats and information on the human and economic costs of the war to hand out to motorists and pedestrians. Many communities around the country, groups will be doing blockades and civil disobedience. So apparently this is a nationwide day. We have not planned such an action. If you are considering doing civil disobedience, please come prepared. NSDD, which is National Stand Down Day. I guess that's what this next Friday's event at the Capitola Recruitment Center is all about, really kind of in solidarity with. It's being coordinated nationally by the Iraq Pledge of Resistance, a group deeply committed to nonviolent principles. You can go and download guidelines and materials at iraqpledge.org. Participating groups including Code Pink Santa Cruz, Women in Black, Coalition for Impeachment Now, Pax Christi, GI Rights and Draft Alternatives, program by the RCNV, Santa Cruz Art and Revolution Convergence, WILP, Santa Cruz Peace and Freedom Party, the Green Party, the Santa Cruz Peace Coalition, the Santa Cruz Weapons Inspection Team, and I also suspect Huff will probably be there too, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Stand down is a term used by the military for days when they have training, reviews, and so on. Stand down comes from their normal duties. Let us stand down for an hour or two from our normal activities and bring the war and occupation to an end. Stand down, lie down, stand up, sit up, stand up for your rights, and so forth, to get a little musical. So that's an actual local protest that's happening, admittedly, in concert with a bunch of national protests, which makes me a little uneasy. I see a phone call. Let's see if we can actually get this person on the line. Don't give up, caller. I'm about to pick you up here. Hi, I hope you're on free radio. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Go
Chris
ahead,
Brosden.
Caller. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Okay. My phone number is 469-9928, and I'm in the Dominican Behavior Health Unit, Psychiatric Lock Unit.
Chris, say that again slowly, could you?
Yeah, my phone number is 469-9478, and I'm in the Dominican Behavioral Health Unit, Lock Psychiatric Unit, since Sunday.
So you've been there for the last week?
Yes. Following 2 months of police harassment, Capitol Police harassment, the U.S. Capitol Police probably directed the U.S. Capitol Police to take me in.
By Capitol Police, you mean police of capitalism? Or?
No, the police who protect the life of the congressman.
Oh, Capitola, you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about both the U.S. Capitol Police and the Capitol Police Department working in conjunction to 5150 me on behalf of Sam Farr, who believes I am harassing his office staff.
Huh.
I do call in violation of verbal orders over phone, which Ed Price says has no legal standing, to inform Sam Farr of my positions, which are, number one, arrest starvation on the planet. We're redirecting $180 billion in subsidies from agricultural oligarchs to put the first world farmers in the third world to build out the agricultural infrastructure. Unfair competition.
Slow down a little bit, Chris, if you could.
Unfair competition in farming is causing has caused 1 billion people to starve in the last century. A quarter of the people are hungry on the planet, one half live in misery. We have not achieved the moral level of insects. Insects do not organize their economy in such a maldistributed fashion. Dr. Sager, the attending physician, refuses to read anything I give him. He refuses even to take it or take my card. He's totally ignorant. I have 500,000 bites on abuses of psychiatry.
Chris, can I ask you something?
What's that?
What is the claim usually when someone is 5150,
yeah,
which is
danger,
a,
danger to self, danger to others.
Both danger to self, and they think you're suicidal?
No.
Well, what exactly?
I don't understand where they get danger to self, danger to others. It's
so they claim. Go ahead.
It's completely bogus.
Can you tell us the circumstances under which you were?
Yeah,
picked up?
Let me tell you. I've been under police harassment in Capitola for 2 months. Two people threatened me. They got in my face, threatened my life. Police did nothing. During one of these instances, there's a gray-haired man standing near the Falk Bank restaurant who witnessed my having been threatened. And when I returned to Fog Bank a couple days ago, he said, I know the police were going to chase you out of town. This is exactly what happened to me. And Freddie showed up that day. He said, either you leave town or we're going to arrest you. So they ran me out one day.
This was on the Capitola Esplanade in front of the Fog Bank restaurant?
Yes, it was.
And you were giving out literature about your campaign
I
for
said,
Congress?
I am a political surgeon. I am going to excise the cancer on the face of our government, George Bush. I need a U.S. House seat to bring an impeachment proceeding. Mm-hmm. And then I handed my card. And believe me, half the people in this country want to get rid of that warmonger in the White House.
More than half, it looks like.
Yes.
But let me ask you, what you say several individuals became so upset with you they threatened you?
Yes, they did. One man came from 30 feet to within 2 inches of my face and threatened me. Somebody threatened me in front of Starbucks in Santa Cruz. He came off the table 15 feet away into my face and threatened me.
What was the nature of the threat?
If you don't shut up, I'm going to put a bag over your head.
Uh-huh. And did you make complaints to the Santa Cruz police and the Capitola police about this and then the threats you say you received in Capitola?
Yes, and they did nothing.
And you said, I guess, in a previous either phone call to the station or possibly in one of your online messages, which people can get by going to?
Google my name, Chris Brozda, B-R-O-Z-D-A.
Okay.
Find the paper on Indonesia. Get into the link through there. There's a link at the top.
All right, but Chris, you haven't been writing for the last week because presumably they don't allow you access in the Dominican psych ward, right?
Well, that's it. We don't have due process. We had a REES, which is to determine my capacity to withhold consent to antipsychotic medication. The doctor is prosecuting me as psychotic.
You're talking about the REES hearing, which you I presume asked them to only give you medication along the lines your doctor prescribed 3 years ago?
For 3 years, I've been stable on 40 milligrams of Geodon.
Of Geodon?
They started me on 80, and then it's up to 120. They shot me up last night. They shot me up a couple of days ago. I tried to spit the garbage out. It produced obesity in 2002.
So can you tell us, and I'm asking you this not because I want you to relive the grim reality, but because I think it's important people know, tell us how these Reese hearings go in the hospital. What exactly?
A woman named Adrienne Stein is a visiting judge. You get an ombudsman, George Carvalho. All he does is talk about this tardive dyskinesia. He usurps your First Amendment right. And the Adrienne Stein refused to hear me or George Carvalho. We've had no defense in the Reese hearing.
So this is a hearing that's held on the hospital premises, right?
Yes, it is.
And this, had they drugged you before this hearing?
No.
And so you, and they were they told you that they wanted you to voluntarily take twice
what I would have been taking.
Your normal dose of Geodon.
And Dr. Lowe of the Emmeline Clinic undermined me by calling Dr. Sager and advising I take not only Geodon, but a so-called moon stabilizer like Depakote.
And are you now being forced to take both of those?
No, he's just up the dose of Geodon to 120 milligrams.
So what kind of arguments did you make at this hearing in order to suggest
that... I just told you Adrienne Stein refused to allow either me or my ombudsman to speak. We had no defense.
So when you attempted to speak, they told you to shut up, or...?
Yes, they said I will not have the right to speak at the hearing.
What was George Carvalho, who is the state, the city, or the county-appointed psychiatric advocate for people in your situation, what did he do?
He did nothing. He was silenced.
What did he say this was the normal procedure at such hearings, that the person...
George Carvalho refused to take any paper from me. I had 10 pages for him to take, and he refused to take it.
So did he have any conversation with you?
We had a conversation that he abruptly terminated after 10 minutes.
And why was that?
I don't know.
Huh. So you're actually now on a 5250, which I assume is a 14-day hold, right?
That's correct.
And what kind of demands are they putting on you? Do you anticipate another 14-day hold that they're going to try to hold you with?
Am I anticipating worse from after this?
Right. I mean, are they suggesting to you?
It gets worse. It got much worse in 2002 when they held me for 150 days in a hospital.
This was previously, right?
Yes. And all I did was photograph supervisors, buttes, and hormone. I took 3 stills of them.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. In this situation now, what are your prospects? What are you looking for people to do? And
I want you to come to court Monday at 9 a.m. in Judge Appel's courtroom, where you will witness me depose her. And she is unfit to serve on the bench. She prior took my license for 6 years for no reason.
Well, Judge Appel, this is a writ of habeas corpus hearing, or what is this?
This will be both a reason and a writ.
Because I understand the Reese hearing doesn't happen in court. It happens in the hospital, and it doesn't even happen before a judge. It happens before some administrative
official. That's right.
Official.
You can appeal it, and we did appeal it.
So you're appealing it, and do you have any representation or counsel?
Andrew Janecki. And Andrew Janecki refused to take any paper also.
And
they
how long?
Refused to take any paper from me. The hearing officer here, my attorney, and my psychiatrist, they all refused to hear me.
Well, now, how long did Janecki, your court-appointed attorney, speak to you for?
20 minutes.
And what kind of conversation did you have? What issues were raised? If you're willing to talk about that, I realize it's confidential. You don't have to.
No, I'm going to remove Andrew Janecki because he doesn't have a voicemail or email. He hasn't called me back. He said he would come and visit me again and take the paper then, and he didn't take the paper Friday. So why should I expect to see him? I'm expecting him to be shown to be the liar that he is, and did not see me, and did not take paper. And to stand up and misrepresent me, where I'm the best representative I can have, is me.
So you want to represent yourself in this situation?
No, I don't.
You
I
don't
want
assistance.
Represent. I want assistance of counsel, uh-huh. Not representation. The Sixth Amendment gives us assistance of counsel.
Right. So you understand that the judges usually either will allow you counsel or they'll allow you to be your own counsel in some circumstances, usually.
Well, you can have co-counsel status.
But in theory, there could be co-counsel status for different attorneys, but I've never heard of the defendant being given co-counsel status in Santa Cruz. I could be, you know, there, it could have happened. I just never heard it happen. I mean, judges are kind of cranky about that I've seen. So you're going before Judge Appel, and you're going to argue. What kind of arguments would you like your attorney to make? And this is at 9 a.m. in department.
No, I would like to silence my attorney and allow me to make the First Amendment right and become because the Ninth Amendment means no right to disparage any other, so they can't use the Sixth to silence the First.
So you're gonna make a broad constitutional argument rather than a specific, I'm not a danger to myself, to others, and I know about drugs, so I'm
going to make a broad constitutional argument that Rand Petterman Short Act, under which I'm held, is unconstitutional on the violation of the First, Second, Fourth, Sixth, Eighth,
right,
and Fourteenth Amendment.
Not likely to succeed, Chris. You realize that.
You know what? You're just a naysayer. That's what you are.
In this situation, yes.
Yes.
I may even.
And you have to say that because you don't want this to succeed, because you won't give me Grace Jackson's phone number, will you? Dr. Grace Jackson.
You know, we can get into that too. I think there are ways to get Grace Jackson's number other than through me.
Do you have it?
And Grace Jackson is, I have it somewhere in a stored area. I'm moving around. But I mean, the point is.
Will you give it to me?
The point is, well, in the past, I've told you, Chris, I found that you've called on the phone repeatedly in violation of my request. I felt a bit harassed. You tend to get, you know, act what I think is inappropriately with me in angry and threatening manner at different times.
And for that reason, you're withholding a phone number.
Well, it's mainly that you don't seem to respond to me when I say I don't feel as. I should give Grace Jackson your phone number, and if she wants to call you, she can. Because, see, it's, I don't think you respect the boundaries of other people as much as I would hope you would.
3 weeks ago at a Huff meeting, did you not swear at me?
I said I would appreciate it if you would stop disrupting the fucking meeting, yes.
No,
I said
you
that.
You used the word fucking several times.
Well, yeah. You know, I do, and I use the word on the radio, too, at times, but. But I think that, you know, rather than relive that, what you're trying to get here, are you not, maybe you're not, is people to come to your hearing.
Yes, I am.
And that's at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah, and I don't like the fact that you diss the fact that I'm making a constitutional argument, criticize it for its unlikelihood of success.
Well, why?
That's not helpful.
It's my candid opinion, Chris. I'm not going to deny my candid opinion on this. I think
no,
if you want to get your ass...
No, you're a naysayer and nothing but a critic.
Right. If you want to get your ass out of there, forgive me for being candid, you need to some... I mean, you can make that argument, and I commend you. Go ahead. Try it. But you need to also work within the Landerman-Petras Short Act and say specifically, no, I'm not a danger to myself. No, I'm not a danger to others. No, I'm not gravely disabled. Yes, I know enough about the medication involved to believe that 120 milligrams of Geodin is three times too much. I have, you know, in other words, you need to make a presentation that judges who are essentially in collusion, as you know, with prosecutors and hospital authorities, will feel obliged to at least respond to. If you make a broad constitutional argument simply, I think you may find it less successful. That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to be a naysayer. I'm trying to tell you my candid view. That's all.
So you think it is constitutional to dose people against their will?
No, I don't.
Then why shouldn't I make a constitutional argument?
Because they're not going to listen to it. I think you should make it, but I think you should, in addition to that, make the argument that you are not, under the current law,
Yeah, let's get to the fact as to why I was actually taken in.
Go ahead.
Man, Freddy came out. Kimura took the report of a man, as I said, a gray-haired man. Who
Let me start. Where did this happen?
I was in front of the Frog Man. The gray-haired man was there. I said to him, I'm going to my car to get the camera. I'm going to photo you. The gray-haired man ran into the restaurant. Kimura came out, interviewed him.
Kimura is an officer?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Officer man, Freddy, stood by me and waited for Kimura to come back, and they decided to arrest me. I am arrested for attempting to photograph someone who threatened to run me out of town with the police and who I did was try to photograph exactly what I did in O2, which caused 150-day confinement. Dr. Sager said, perhaps you should not photograph people. And I said, are you denying me my journalism right, photojournalistic right under the First Amendment, to exercise my First Amendment? He had no response. Mm-hmm. I'm in here for attempting to photograph somebody who stood around while my life was threatened while police did nothing.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the police would say they were arresting you for or taking you in for? What would be their claim?
I think they're under instructions from the U.S. Capitol Police that Sam Farr is harassing my campaign.
You think it's a broad conspiracy?
I think this arrest is at the behest of the U.S. Capitol Police, who Eli, a worker here, told me was in contact with the Capitol Police Department. That's in my file. I asked Dr. Sager, are you working on behalf of Sam Farr's campaign to stifle my speech and oppress it by chemical means?
Chris, let me ask you this. What do you think a police officer would tell a court was the reason he arrested you? Because he has to present in his report probable cause. What do you think he would claim would be probable cause for arresting you?
Well, let me look at the cert. The cert says, per police officer, patient reportedly harassed a person in the Capitol Village.
So he would say you were harassing this person.
I was not harassing him.
I'm not anymore. Saying you were. I'm saying that's what he would say.
Yeah, hold on. I got a phone in another one. Can I call you back?
Chris, I'm going to have to roll on you here. Because I'm going to have to roll on you. We've taken it about as far as I want to go at this point. Give you a couple minutes to sum up, and then I'm going to move on.
Okay. Well, from the shirt, the patient's view is that people threaten him, and he wants to take pictures of the people he believes threaten him and put them on his webpage. I did take photographs of One Mountain Butte in 02, and they did threaten my life by illegalizing my existence at night in a state of unconsciousness sleep. Capitol Police have received many calls from different people complaining about patients' intrusiveness. I am not intrusive. I'm Chris Brazda. I'm going to remove a cancer on the body politic. I'm going to D.C. to impeach a war criminal. His name is George Bush.
Okay.
And that's what the cert says. Now, at the hearing, I have to prove that they have to prove that I'm incompetent or psychotic. And I'm neither incompetent or psychotic. Dr. Sager correctly said that I was subject to pharmacological homicide, that Theodon is sedating and shrinks the neocortex. This is certainly true. As for Jim Gottstein's work at PsychRight's website that I used in my article, Abuses of Psychiatry, he said I have grandiose and paranoid beliefs and that it's grandiose and paranoid that I believe that people are threatening me when they're right in my face doing it. Please ignore it. It's not grandiose to seek an office. I ran for school board while confined for photography, tortured with medicine. I got 31%, 7,500 votes for school board, too.
Chris, thank you for calling in, and good luck at the hearing tomorrow.
Listen, are we done?
We're done. And that was Chris Brozda. He is on the psych ward at Dominican. If you want to reach him and talk with him, you can give a call to 476-9928, or you can check him out at the hearing tomorrow, 9 a.m. in Judge Acow's court. For those of you who have concern about the rights of people being held on Dominican, it might be an interesting situation for you to look at. I have my differences with Chris, and I believe what I said earlier in the phone conversation with him, that he doesn't seem to understand the boundaries often with people, whether this justifies his being doped up and held on a Dominican psych ward. I would say no. I think Chris understands well enough the meaning of a criminal charge, and he's been charged criminally, and such charges have also eventually been dropped. Instead, I guess they're choosing to simply confine him and dope him up, which I think is, frankly, I agree with him. I think it's a violation of constitutional provisions. Doesn't mean I have solutions as to what to do when people are raging at you repeatedly. I guess you can call a police officer and ask the police officer to suggest the man step away because you need to go back to what you're doing. Chris gets very impassioned about his rights, as he should, and I think he often confuses his rights with his right to be heard by other people who may not want to listen to him, and that's always a problem. I know I'd like to be heard by a lot of people, and oft times I'm not. And indeed, I'm facing a trial on December 12th for disrupting a council meeting, which the disruption involves standing at a microphone waiting for a chance to speak for 2 minutes, and somewhat different than Chris's situation in some sense, certainly. But there are, you know, it's a difficult situation. Anyway, phone line seems to be open and working. That's good news. 427-3772 is the phone number. I've got some street interviewing I'm going to pass on to you, and then we're going to continue with the show. If at any point you want to call in and make some commentary yourself, feel free to do so. Again, 427-3772. Also, you can go to pagesincolor.com, which is the chat room, which I'm actually going to look at now. I got kind of lost in that last conversation, and we'll see what's cooking. If I can find the chat room, that is. Yeah, there it is. I'm the only one on it at the moment. So you can go to the chat room, pagesincolor.com, if you want. Click on chat, write in your name, and you can chatter at me if you wish, or you can just jump on the phone, 427-3772, and chatter at me that way.
Okay, well, it's about noon. We're out here down right across from the Taqueria, and we're talking with...
Stanley Mays.
And, Stanley, you've got some words about what happened to you in the Hooskow.
I spent 11 of the last 17 months in the goddamn county jail for being homeless. I told the judge I'm guilty of being homeless. I got all these drinking and public tickets because I don't have a house.
And we're not talking public intoxication.
No, we're talking open container. No theft, no nothing.
Open container or drinking in public?
Open container or drinking in public. And that's it. And I was trespassing because I was sleeping on someone else's property because I don't have a house. But here's the deal. I told that judge in court, I said, this is a travesty. That audience out there, they're going to go home to their nice warm apartments, kick on their cable TV, and probably have a double vodka martini. But I walk out of the liquor store with a 12-ounce can of beer, and I got to go to jail? Where's the justice?
Do you remember the name of the judge who sentenced you?
Yeah, Holmquist.
What did he say in response?
Well, we have many programs. I said, I'm not programmable.
Cool, man. Well, what, you mean programs?
I said, I'm not guilty. I'm guilty of being homeless.
You mean...
I plead guilty to being homeless.
You mean they have many programs for convincing... Hang on. They have many programs for convincing you that you're a child, you're a child and should not be allowed to open a beer on the street.
A bunch of freaks in some contained environment, you know, like a zoo. I said, no. I'm not programmable.
Now, what kind of program?
4 months in jail out of 6 months sentence for drinking tickets.
Now,
he will verify that.
Well, I believe you.
Ask him.
Let me ask you this. Have you been hassled since you got out? How long have you been out?
Yeah, well, I got two tickets.
For?
Open container and glass on the beach. I had a quart of beer on my birthday. I got released on my birthday. I went down to the beach under the pier to see my friends. I had a quart of beer.
Yeah.
Well, I got a ticket for glass on the beach and open container.
Now,
immediately, 6 hours.
When was your birthday?
July 14th. That's my release date.
Hey, that's Bastille Day, man.
I know. But that's my release
date. Stan's mother's birthing day.
Well, that's...
That's the day your mom had you.
Now I've got like 7 tickets and brandishing a weapon. I showed this guy my knife.
Right.
Well, I got stabbed out here on the street by skinhead punks.
And you're showing me a 4-inch blade?
A regular knife.
Yeah.
Buy them anywhere.
Well,
you know what? They stole mine. I had to buy another.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what.
Now, have you been?
I'm not walking around without weapons.
Now, of course, we are in the lower ocean right now.
You like to see the hole in my leg?
And you're showing me a scar on your right thigh.
All the way in with a buck knife.
Stabbed in there.
Punks beat me up and stabbed me. 4 of them.
How long ago?
2.5 years.
Okay. So.
And you know what? I caught one of those punks. They tried to rob me again. He called me and said, you're nothing but a drunken faggot. I had a can of cranberry sauce in my hand.
Right.
I hit him in the head and I said, happy Thanksgiving, bitch. Smashed his ass to the ground. He went to Dominican.
Self-defense, we hope.
Dominican. Fucking right. I didn't get a ticket for that.
Now,
they're still hassling me for being homeless.
Now, where do you sleep at night? What kind of places do you go?
I sleep at the mortuary. I know the owners.
Uh-huh. And they don't hassle. Even
though people are dying to get in there.
You're going to get it, man.
How do you like it?
I don't know. I'll ask you. I got a riddle for you.
I know the owners, and they know me, and I'm all good.
Let me give you a riddle, Stan. I want you to answer me this one. What do you get when you cross an owl and a pirate ship?
I couldn't figure that one. I've had 8 confrontations.
Wait. You get a bird that hoots from the ship. Rather than shoots from the hip.
I can't go there.
Can't go there.
I'll tell you what.
So, yourself, now right now, are you intoxicated?
Slightly.
But you're not unable to take care of yourself.
I'm totally fine.
And you're not abusive to people?
No. You can look at my record in Santa Cruz County. There's no theft, no violence, nothing on my record except drinking and having drug paraphernalia, which I quit all that years ago.
Are particular police officers that have a...
all know me by my first name. Well, every single cop in this town knows
right.
my first name.
Stan, are there any officers who have a hard-on for you, so to speak, as far as giving you tickets?
Well, Gallegos.
Why is that?
No, because he's undercover. Riding around a green van.
Didn't he blow his cover by coming up and giving you a citation?
He gave me a break, though. I'll give him credit for that. But, actually, most of them are pretty fair-handed. A couple of them aren't. I can't remember their names.
Well, do you feel that the citations that you got were fair citations? It sounds like you don't.
It's bullshit. Right. I'm being cited because I'm homeless. I would drink in my house if I had one.
Right.
I'm drinking a beer. I'm 51 years old. I can't have a beer.
Well, so what you're saying is that even though you think the officers are in a certain sense fair, in another sense, they're not fair in another sense.
Well, they're just trying to fill paper up. They're trying to legitimize their jobs. You know, RoboCop told me, you know RoboCop?
Officer Perry.
Officer David Perry, yes. I know him very well. He told me my job is to ride around in this car and drink coffee. When I got to stop and get out, I got to work. When I got to work, somebody's going to go to jail. So
Officer Perry.
From the ocean to the east side. He says, I don't give a shit what you do on the other side of town. Don't be on my beat. So I want to know what every officer's beat is. I want to know what their schedules are so I can avoid them.
So perhaps we can interview officers and publicize their schedules.
Public information to our officers' schedules.
Good question. I've never inquired into the actual schedule. Perhaps I should.
I think they work for the public. I think we should find out what their schedules are.
All right, so all you listeners out there, if you want to put in a Public Records Act request, the police department asking for the beats of each individual officer, we will play those beats on the air. So individual members and members of the public can get in touch with those officers if they'd like to talk to them and so forth.
I think that's fair. We pay their bill. They're getting their check from the public.
Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and then leave us your information, and we'll pass it on to folks who are listening. Thank you, Stan.
You bet. Anytime.
And it's a quick report from the downtown, about 2:25 on Tuesday afternoon, sunny day on Pacific Avenue near Cafe Campesino. Notice a new bench has gone in next to the Del Mar Theater. Very nice, except this was the bench that was removed from the Union Grove Music Area, or Punker Corner, as it's called. I'm not actually positive of that, but it seems an interesting coincidence. I suppose I should check it out with Parks and Rec to get their view. There's also several guitarists downtown we haven't seen before, both on public property, shockingly enough. Down here, it's October 5th, talking with Ernie, musician, pianist, and homeless scoundrel. What do you got in your hand there, Ernie?
You calling me names now? You here harassing the poor and impoverished of
damn
our
right,
community?
Man.
I refuse to put up with all this harassment.
I commend you on your standing up to this kind of shit.
But I will accept this.
Forget it. This is a free radio property, man. So what's happening? You got a bag on your shoulder. You're kicking a kind of a suitcase bag. Where's your piano, man?
Well, I have that at a friend's place, but I'm going to be securing that for a performance coming up this Saturday at the Free Street Fair between City Hall and the Civic Center on Saturday, and I'm going to be premiering.
What time will that be?
Well, you know, I guess it starts around noon or so. I don't know exactly when I'm going to hit the stage because I haven't gotten the schedule yet. But in any case, it's going to be, I guess, sometime during the afternoon. And I'll be premiering, several of my brand new songs.
Do you want to do a little a cappella here or not?
I could do a little bit of that. Let me just gather my thoughts.
And clear your throat, please.
Yes, that too.
Ernie has actually been on free radio before. He's made several CDs, and I played them on the air. There was massive protest, of course, so I had to stop playing Ernie's stuff. But it remains in the archives for those who want to listen to it at Huff SantaCruz.org, although, of course, you'll have to go through about 100 shows to find it. Are you ready, Ernie?
Okay.
What's this called?
This is called Destiny.
Okay.
Any minute you never know, your life can turn into the opposite. Every day the wheel of fortune keeps turning. You never know what the new day may bring. One day you're on the top of the heap, the next day you're under lock and key. You never know from one day to another what your fate is gonna turn out to be. Why am I here? Why am I the way I am? The events of my life are corridors and passages, taking me down a tunnel to where I am. What can I do? How should I spend my time? The days of my biography are phases of a destiny, pulling me like a wagon to where I have to be. Maybe I'm just a puppet, a plaything of the universe, a providential wind-up toy, a laughing, crying machine of my destiny. It's all taking me to my destiny, pushing me and pulling me to my destiny.
Hey, thank you, Ernie. And that name of that song, of course, is?
Destiny, and that's from my new musical show, Viva Voltaire. And I'm going to be premiering as many songs from the new show as I can on Saturday.
Thanks. And that's going to be around noon, right outside between the Civic and City Hall, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, at the free street fair.
That's Saturday, October 8th. Thank you, Ernie.
All right, good. We'll see you there.
All right. Last chance to be on free radio.
No, I'm all set.
All right, this
I'm
is a man.
I'm from New Hampshire, though. That'd be a kicker.
You are from New Hampshire. How long have you been here?
Almost a month.
And is this, yeah, I got this great sign. I have.
My first one was trying to get back to New Hampshire.
And you, it didn't work. It didn't work. So you're stuck. And so has this sign been more effective? Is I have no sense.
Yeah.
Help, spare anything. Well, I better spare something in order to perhaps loosen your tongue. It might, probably not, but we'll see what happens. Some small change here. Anything happened that you know that you mentioned? I know that you were reluctant to talk about this, but it's important for people out there because a lot of people who are on the streets listen to this station, or some do, I think. You were robbed 3 times in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
And was that like, you know, people you kind of trusted and then made off with your stuff, or just random folks?
Once it was a random person, another time it was someone female, which I thought I could trust, and another one was actually walking through town.
Here on Pacific Avenue?
Yeah,
or?
It was early in the morning, and...
Armed robbery, or...?
Well, no, he just stopped me, asked me what was in my bag, you know, I think he was strung out, was trying to get his fix, so he was looking for something in my bag to sell,
uh-huh.
You know, but I obviously wouldn't let him go through my bag. He followed me down the street, kept asking me, and I finally turned around and said, hey, there's nothing in my bag, and if you want to go through it, you're going to have to, you know, get physical, and he just kind of shook his head and walked away.
So that was attempted robbery?
That was, the third one was an attempt, yes.
So, but you look pretty placid out here. We're in front of Borders. It's about 10:30 in the morning, and I don't see a lot of dollar bills on the sidewalk. What's the success rate been of your panhandling effort?
Actually, I've made as much as $10 in one day.
And for how many hours work?
Oh, gosh. 8.
Which is a dollar 10 cents an hour or some such thing?
Some such thing, yes.
And you said you had this, I want to get back to New Hampshire sign, but it didn't sell.
No, I really did want to get back to New Hampshire because I think I'd have a better shot at getting a job and actually living a, you know, different lifestyle.
What kind of work do you do?
All kinds of different stuff. I've done customer service representative, warehouse, landscaping, a lot of different things.
Any hassles from police?
Yeah, a few times. I can't sit in certain corners anymore because I've been there too many days in a row. I can't.
Really? A new rule made up by the police force?
Yes, I was quite surprised too, because I see people down there every once in a while now.
Where was that?
It was actually just a couple of blocks up. I don't know what the name of the right there, the Irish pub. The place next to it.
And what officer was it? A woman, female officer, who told this, or male?
Both. That chubby guy and the other woman.
And did they say you've been there for more than an hour, or you've been there too many days in a row?
They just said that I needed to get up and I needed to move. That they've had complaints, and I'm a very silent panhandler. I don't.
Well, maybe they didn't like the color of your hat. Have you considered a new color?
Right. Could be.
Yeah. Anything you want to say to folks out there in Free Radio Land, or any old New Hampshire lovers?
No. Just take care and God bless everybody and keep trying to live.
And again, your first name is?
John.
Thanks, John.
Yep. Take it easy.
Don't you want to hear the story of my life? One of them movie companies, TV documentaries. Won't you come and ask me, please? And pay me $1 million to tell you what I do at the store. Cause if you pay me $1 million, I wouldn't gotta go and do it no more.
One, two, three, four.
Just like the song says,
everybody got to know that song. Everybody living the whole day long. All the
And that's from the musical Working. For all you musical hounds out there, we'll be hearing a few more musical numbers, so those who don't like musicals can run for cover. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're with you till 1, maybe a little after, maybe not. You can call in 427-3772 and chat. I'm hoping to play a little tape from the Richard Quigley Memorial a bit later in the show. Richard Quigley, we'll talk about it then. He's a man who's appeared repeatedly on this show, had his own show on KSCO. He's dying of lymphoma. He held his own wake yesterday. It's actually chronicled somewhat in today's Sentinel, the Santa Cruz Monopoly newspaper that actually it has him on the front of the second section, the local section, if you want to kick down $1.50. It may even be online if you go to the Sentinel story online. Couple of things that I didn't get to last time when this situation came up here. I have a short show on Thursdays. At the city council meeting, a guy named Nicholas Gould, that's the Santa Cruz City Council, on Tuesday talked about the noise ordinance, and he represented himself as being part of the new group, the Santa Cruz Recreational Arts and Music Collective, SCRAM. 50 people in a dozen local bands. They praised the live entertainment permit loosening, which I don't think I had time to get to, and again, may not have time today to get to, but I may try to do that. There was an ordinance that now allows, I think, it allows live performances, even amplified performances, I believe. It's not too amplified. And inside cafes and so forth, without the elaborate police permits that were required before. And we used to see officers like Deputy Chief Sapone and Butchie Baker running around harassing different venues. And then Mayor Christopher Crone tried to do something about it during his regime when he wasn't arresting people like me. And I'm glad, actually, that he did try to do something about it. I think eventually a committee was formed on which Ryan Coonerty, now council member, attorney and son of Neil Bookshop Santa Cruz owner Neil Coonerty, he headed that committee or was a part of it, and it passed at the last city council meeting, and it was praised by SCRAM activists like Nicholas Gould. I'm just thinking it would be nice to see SCRAM activists get together with SAFE activists. It looks like SCRAM mainly is concerned with musical venues indoors, whereas SAFE is concerned with, they do a jam every Wednesday night. SAFE is Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, which I also call the Three Performers Against Foolish Enforcement. I guess it sounds like it has more punch and less pomp. But the one thing that SCRAM, Nicholas Gould's group, did point out were that they were concerned about the anti-partying ordinance or the anti-noise ordinance or the ordinance that was passed this summer when the students were gone, the Rotkin ordinance that in essence levies extreme penalties on households that where the police have to be called more than once in a period of 12 months, and it's cumulative. So if you change your household and you sell it, or it passes on to somebody else, renter moves out, another one moves in, you still are faced with the same the cumulative penalties that the other person had if you have a party where the police come and decide that they want to give you either a civil citation or a criminal citation. So point was that Nicholas Gould of SCRAM pointed out that this seemed to have cut back on the kind of musical venues that musicians have, that they're no longer being invited to parties and so forth because of this. And I don't know how accurate that is, or maybe whether I'm understanding him fully, or whether he is reporting a lot of information, or just simply a hostile opinion to the Rotkin unruly parties ordinance. And I hope to talk to him more in the future. Also at the city council meeting, just to kind of give you an update, there were some Jesse Street Marsh, I call them vigilantes, who want to clean up the area. I may be playing this later, so this may all be an unnecessary summary, but perhaps I won't, so maybe it is necessary. They're concerned with the usual camps in the area. This is Neighbors of Lower Ocean Group, no doubt led by the doughty Officer Howes or some other such police cheerleader. They want to patrol the area, make it safe, that is to say, homeless-free. Folks inside houses, of course, talking about making it safe, it's kind of ironic. They obviously are much safer than people on the streets who face assault rates at 4 to 10 times the normal, the rate of an ordinary housed person, according to our police department's own stats. Actually, their stats say 4 times as likely. That was Chief Belcher in 1999, in a report we finally got him to release when the Homeless Issues Task Force was actually in operation. That is to say, it was an operation leading everybody off into nowhere, but they did come up with an interesting report, which is online. If you go to Santa Cruz Homeless Issues Task Force, if you Google for it, you'll get their full report on the CAB website. Very interesting. Virtually none of the recommendations got any kind of consideration from the city council in a serious way, and none of them were passed, I think, in a meaningful way that had resulted in some changes. Instead, they went ahead with the city council and had this prearranged, put together a family shelter for $5 million and forget the rest of the homeless, and let's just move right along. I think they also got Eric Seeley, Sergeant Seeley, as the homeless resource officer, or the homeless harassment officer, as some have called him, although there's mixed views on Sergeant Seeley. He may have improved. They used to call him Smirking Seeley because he couldn't seem to wipe that grin off his face, no matter how hard he tried, but he may have become more temperate, both in his behavior and his manner. It's quite possible. I don't wish to second-guess him on that. Again, looking at some notes I made for the prior show, I really was hoping to be able to do an update on the Metro strike. You know, I mean, we spent literally hours of tape on it while the strikers were striking and the Metro board was evading any kind of sabotaging negotiations, or let's say rejecting the settlement that their own negotiators had proposed, and then going back into ignoring the strikers for 2 weeks, and then, according to Bonnie Moore, stalling and coming up with the same proposals. And then the strike abruptly ended, and I, just to show you, I'm not all simply knee-jerk pro-union. I was constantly asking the union members to put the damn contract back online, which it had been online, the previous contract, but then they put it under lock and key once activists Paul Marcel and Sampson, this is according to his report, had brought it up at a Metro board meeting or some such meeting, and the next day they locked everybody out of the contract. And you have to get the contract, which is a thick 180-page thing. You have to go to the actual transit headquarters and get a printed copy, which is kind of outrageous that the union would do such a thing. And I've reported this to the union members at least 4 times, including union boss Bonnie Moore, and she has done nothing about this. So I'm not happy with that. I think that's bullshit, and I'm not afraid to criticize her for it. I also find it interesting that the strike ended when the benefits ran out. The first month of strike was benefits continue on. And when that was over, they got down. Finally, there was a settlement reached. And again, I've read the terms of the settlement in the Mid-County Post, which, though it's, I think, biased in favor of the Metro management, still is an interesting and useful place to go, probably more useful than the Sentinel. But I don't really have a really clear summary of it. I hope to get it to you soon in terms of, I'd like to have both Bonnie and Paul on to kind of give their different perspectives. I doubt I'm going to be able to get that to happen, because Bonnie's driving again, and Paul's hard to reach, too, but we'll see what happens. Looks like we have a phone call coming in. I hope that our phone is working here. Hi, you're on Free Radio, I hope.
Hello?
Hi.
Is Robert on, or is that recorded?
This is Robert, and I may sound recorded, but I'm real.
Oh, it's Madison.
Oh, hi, Madison. How's it going?
Good. How come you don't run for mayor?
Well, you can't run for mayor. You can run for shitty council, as I like to disparagingly call them. And I have. Yeah. I actually ran as a write-in candidate and got 42 votes in the last election. You probably didn't hear about that.
You only got 42 votes?
Well, I was a little suspicious because I did vote for myself 5 times. So I'm wondering, you know, what the heck is going on here? But yeah, that's what the Leslie Cook or the Registrar of Voters or somebody told me, and I found it peculiar because I think I probably got more votes than that, but it was a write-in. And for people to do write-ins, it's harder. Your name isn't on the ballot and so forth.
Yeah.
I generally avoid that. The answer to that question is because in order to make a meaningful difference, first of all, to win, you have to spend thousands of dollars generally. And then if you do win, in order to avoid being co-opted by the city council system, you need to have a parallel set of committees and citizen meetings and pressure groups in place that will actually allow you to exist as a lone council voice for the next 2 years, because that's what you'll be if you're really challenging issues at the city council. At least that's my view. The kinds of, you know,
yeah,
my issues. My issues, you and I don't always agree, but, you know, that, you know, my issues. So what's up?
Well, you know, I think that we need, you know, you got to respect the people that are there because they're doing the job, you know, and the cop's job isn't very fun. And even being the mayor, I think, of this town, it's so diversified that it's a challenge for those people that are in that spot. I mean, I helped Ryan and Tony get in because they had actually lived in one other city in their lives besides Santa Cruz.
I'm sorry,
since 72.
Who did you help? I'm sorry.
Well, I kind of helped Tony and Ryan.
Oh, Tony Madrigal, because, Ryan Coonerty. Okay.
Because we needed a new voice and fresh vision, because everybody else is like in their 50s. They got here in 72 and they haven't left or lived anywhere else since then. And they really don't know how to handle the demands and the growth. And I've helped so many at-risk kids in my life. And I understand this process of dysfunctional families. But I told some of my friends this month, I said, my God, this is the first time I've ever really had an entire at-risk town. And no one's willing to admit it. Like, I call the Sentinel, I call the Good Time, I call the Metro, and I say, how come nobody is doing an article to wake up this town to the fact that nearly 20 kids have been shot, maimed, and or killed, and it's all been in relation to drugs and alcohol. I mean, I'm not saying prohibition, but there's ability to manage it. And because we partied real hard. I was like during the punk era. And, you know, we took from the hippies what we could, and we did our own thing, and it was wild. But, you know, to have one kid in a four-year period die from a drunk driving accident was, you know, and there's not that many more kids in Santa Cruz than there used to be. There's actually less. And how the parents are in this utter denial over it, or the papers, they just, is it that it's uncool to say that you need to manage your party? And that some of these writers don't want to be Joe Uncool because they're getting older?
are you talking
happening to them? I don't know, but
let me ask
when
you.
I say, I mean, I broke up 9 fights in front of my house. I'm not talking 2 kids, I'm talking 20.
So, Madison,
rocks,
let me ask you.
Bottles.
Let me ask you something, Madison. Are you saying, and I'm frankly not familiar with the stat in terms of the number of people who've died from, let's say, drunk driving accidents in the last few years. Is that, you say only one kid has died that you know of for drunk driving?
No, dear. I stopped counting because I'm very sensitive, and it made me just shake and shudder. Because I stopped at Aptos. There were 2 killed, and I counted Half Moon Bay.
So it's considerably more than 5 or 10, or, I mean,
There were 4 kids that shot at each other there from Seaside, but it was at the Catalyst or behind the Catalyst.
Well, I'm not talking about, no, wait a minute. I'm trying to make a distinction here between kids who died from violence and those who died from drunk driving. And do you have any sense of the difference in those stats in the last 3 or 4 years?
I think drunk driving were pushing 10. Upwards of 10 in the last year.
And about 20 from other violence.
And then another, 10 or 15. And that's only the ones I know because I don't get the paper.
So maybe 10 from violence, 10 from drunk driving.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not saying that's not appalling, but if you want to look at what to do, and I know you last time when you called focused on methadrine, the drug situation, yep, and the gang situation, you know, and you heard my response and disagreed with it, I believe. And
no, I don't think you're in complete disagreement, but you do, you know, I actually, if we could legalize all the drugs, that might be the solution.
Medicalized, the way I look at it. You put it into a situation where people can go and use them in controlled and safe environments, and where you remove the financial incentive to sell them illegally as black market items. I mean, that, obviously gangs would exist for other reasons, probably. But
well, on my block, we got rid of the kids. Well, when they start shooting at each other, then my hammer's coming down. Up to that point, or if they even bring a gun. Up to that point, you know, it's your life, your freedom, go do it. But if you're going to be on my block,
oh, yeah, no,
you're going to hit somebody or bring a gun, I'm going to turn into a, you know, is
no. Yeah, I mean, even violent fights are, you know, knives, guns, even abusive behavior on one's block is, I think, a matter of concern. No question about it. And I might become very much of a prohibitionist if it were happening, or, you know, in my household or right down the road from me. I mean, one's views can change very radically when it affects you personally.
Oh, we have it daily. Yeah. It's daily here. Daily, sometimes 2-3 times a day. And I've lived in South Central L.A. This is 20 times worse.
But you know,
people haven't lived anywhere else, so how do they know?
But you know,
what is your comparative, Mayor?
What I'm thinking is that, you know, we often talk as advocates, at least I as an advocate of drug legalization or decriminalization or medicalization, by saying, well, look at the alcohol prohibition and look what happened there. But actually, I've tried to do a little reading on prohibition, and it is true that deaths from alcohol dropped when alcohol was criminalized, because there was less access in that sense, as I believe it. And I'm not, that was my, that's a kind of a partial conclusion I drew from the reading I made, which again, I've got to go back to the sources to be sure. So
right.
I don't want people to kind of mouth these nostrums about, well, you know, gee, if we only legalized everything, the uses would drop necessarily.
Well, we were going through down here, I'm on Maple, you know, there's 40 places to get booze within 3 blocks of my house, and we're not counting, that stops at the taco store and the new Italian restaurant. And I'm not against booze, even though 3 of my family members have been annihilated by drugs and several other friends. I'm still let people do their thing. But when they don't know how to handle it, you know, and they're throwing bricks and rocks at each other and breaking things, like,
sure.
You know, there's the other night someone broke a porch off an 112-year-old Victorian out here. It's a weekly and daily occurrence downtown. So, and we called, the only action I got, I mean, there are several officers who are very honest and very good, and they really tried to get to thin it down, you know, thin it down. When you mix heroin, meth, alcohol, and unexplained, you know, unextrapolated use of it, then we were inundated. So several of them were really good about it. Several of them weren't. Several of them didn't even show up. They should be fired. And then, it was so out of control, the police department can't handle it all. So we I'm just to send a message to city council, and I'm pro-art, you know that. I'm like more than anybody probably in the United States of America. I'm pro-art and know how to do the business of art and have, you know, I have all the stats to back up my arguments, and I win every time. But I sent a letter to ABC because they send us a thing about alcohol, and I went to Emily Riley and I said, Emily, look, man. Our houses are getting torn up, and our people, and, you know, the whole bit. And she said, okay, there'll be no more. And then we got 3 more liquor requests for permits. One was Hernandez Markets, locals, full-time locals, hey, let it go. The other one, I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. Oh, Baba Rosa Grill. I figured, oh, that's an old guy's place. You know, you're trying to put a steakhouse in a veg town. You know, they'll have enough trouble making it. You know, the steakhouse with all these vegetarians running around, I don't know if it'll make it, but it didn't say anything like that.
So your
third one was actually the art venue down here.
So, Madison, you're talking about increased alcohol outlets. That was your concern?
More of them, yeah. So I actually, just to send a note or a message back to the council, I sent a note to ABC because that's how you have to respond, that we don't, you know what I mean? Enough is enough is enough, because Emily before that had said there would be no more, and now I got the third permit. And so I sent a note saying, you know, this is what's going on in our neighborhood, and it's just, ABC they were like shocked, and I'm like, I'm supposed to be more shocked, but I was getting.
Well, what's the reaction of Riley and the two?
Oh, she was ticked off at me.
What about the two council members that you backed, Coonerty and Madrigal?
I didn't ever talk to anybody else on that, but she was ticked because she's trying to get that whole thing going down there, and I am too. I mean, the arts here and the change and the naming, renaming of district, all that stuff. That's all my intellectual property that Kirby put his name all over, and all that stuff he claimed in San Jose, he was never even there.
So Riley,
he never did any of that.
So Madison,
none, zero.
Madison,
and the papers, I called the papers, and there was no correction of information.
Riley was pissed at you for calling her back, or
no? She was kind of ticked for me getting in the way of that new business, and when it came to the final hearing, I never went. I just let it go. You know what I mean? I can be hands on and hands off.
Which business was this?
It was the attic.
The attic.
The attic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Madison, I appreciate your calling in. You want to quickly sum up because I'm going to roll?
Well, you know, then ABC came down a bunch of times, which quieted it down. And my fear was, I mean, looking back, it's like, thank God that had happened, because what would have Halloween been like had it not been cooled off a little, it would have been a complete bloodbath. Rather than 8 people, it would have probably been 80. Because everyone would have, you know, the bartenders wouldn't have been as rounded about what's going on down there. You know, or cool it out. I mean, 4 drinks is enough, or whatever it is that, you know, makes people go off. But I think that the planning for downtown after the earthquake, they had no solution. And I showed up, and I'm like, oh, there is bar down. The next thing we should take to the city is drug town, art town, and make a list. Because what we have here is the farthest thing from an art town, and the king has no clothes. Everyone thinks this is an art town, and you go to Santa Fe, you go to Florence, you go, but this is so far from that, it's just unbelievable.
Maybe we need some hemp shops to replace the alcohol shops. Thanks for calling, Madison.
Yeah, I agree, you know.
Take care.
A lot of things, but I'll talk to you again, Sam.
Alrighty.
Just, you know.
Bye-bye.
I think we need another entertainment night district identified somewhere else on the other side of town.
Gotcha. Talk to you later. And thanks for calling in. Phone lines open, 427-3772. If you have any thoughts on what the last caller was talking about, feel free to comment. The city council, if Madison backed these couple council members in the last race, they might well respond to her. If you want to call the city council on any of these issues, you can. 420-5020 is the number. It's a 24-hour number. I don't know the... do anything other than delete your messages, but presumably if your name isn't Robert Norris or maybe Madison, they will at least check you out before deleting you. After all, you could be another big donor. Maybe, you know, who knows what the story is. So you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1. I'm going to pick up a few more interviews here and proceed. Let's see how we're doing, and we'll do some more. You can call in if you'd like as well. But, of course, first we have to play tapes at the right speed, which is always a challenge. Let's see what we're doing. Here's an interview that might interest you. It's a local entrepreneur, two entrepreneurs, a mom and daughter, selling an unusual, not that unusual, but unusual to find the product being hawked on the street.
Well, here we are at downtown with these two fetching bra-clad babes. This is a very unusual bra. This has got kind of gold num-nums and tassels and bells and suede. And you got the old black silk on.
Little problem with that tape. My goodness, the machine is eating it up. I've got to do something about this. Sometimes we have these little technical difficulties. I've got to upgrade my technology. That's been a concern that some have noticed in the past. Bear with me while I deal with my...
Pausing beside a rather tattered van. Actually, tattered isn't quite the word. It's got a picture of some kind of a bizarre drawing on it. I can't quite understand it, but...
Surf van.
It's a surf band van?
It's a surf van.
Surf van. Now, sir, you have your living quarters inside this Volkswagen van. What is your name?
My name is Zoran.
I think we last spoke at the Wamska-Bamska thing.
Yes, we did.
And you said that you had an interesting experience in Lodi, is that right?
Oh, yes. That was very interesting.
Tell us all the details. We're just breathless.
Okay, well, I have had an interesting scenario with institutionalizations. That's been a common theme. And my father, Dr. Henshaw, lives in Lodi, and I was trying to get him to help me get to the natural sort of healing and whatnot, a natural clinic where my son is in Sweden. But he would not help me. As a matter of fact, he was very harmful. He tried to call the police on me and put me in a Stockton State institution, which is very trying and frustrating.
You were 5150'd?
By him many times.
And what does he feel is the basis? Was he a danger to yourself, danger to others, gravely disabled, or a pain in the ass?
Well, that would be his mind, but he felt that...
No, which one of those?
I know. He felt that I need medication to balance myself out. He is a natural doctor. He's a vegan. So I guess it would qualify as not able to take care of myself. And he doesn't hear me about Social State Sweden, and he also is a vegan, and he's an herbalist.
Do you need medication?
I believe I need holistic healing. I would love herbal medication.
What medication does... were you forced to take medication when you were held in the Lodi, whatever it was? What was this place you were held?
Stockton. Stockton State Psychiatric, yes.
Stockton Stockyards. What what kind of medication did they pump into you?
They injected me with Haldol.
Charming.
Yeah.
And when did this happen?
This was like 2.5 weeks ago.
And did they give you an option to, under the Reese decision, to suggest that you might not want Haldol or you might be able to manage your own affairs without it?
No, I was involuntarily injected.
Were you screaming violently, attacking guards, attempting to rape the nearest nurse? What happened?
Just the nurses.
So you were, in fact, they had to calm you down, they had to stop your erection and so forth?
No, I was a bit euphoric where I was speaking about my son in Sweden. It's like a bit excited, but nothing dangerous, nothing where they couldn't call me, you know. But I was actually terrified because I had been brought in by the police for, you know, just ridiculous reasons.
What was the circumstance under which you were brought in?
I was trying to reconnect with my father through another doctor's wife, actually. She knew about me and my case. And we were trying to reconnect, and then my father involved the Lodi police.
What specifically, what incident did he use, and what were you doing when the police came?
They said that I was trying to break into a house, which was ridiculous. I was never trying to break into a house. Even the lady swears that I wasn't doing that, but that's what the police made the excuse of.
Now, when you did you ask not to be given Haldol?
Yeah, I have always asked just for natural healing, even in those circumstances.
And what did they say?
There's no rights when you can't, I can't reason with them when I'm in that state. I have no power. They had me on a bed. It was handcuffs to a bed, so I was tied down, and it was little or no reason.
And how long were you held there?
For about 5 days.
And how long were you handcuffed?
I was handcuffed from the transportation, about 45 to hour and a half.
And have you been suffering any lingering effects or any fine benefits from your Haldol treatment?
Just the absolute terror, a few nightmares. I just had a dream today about the police. That was very terrifying. So it's just an emotional, more emotional, but when the drug is in the system, that is just petrifying.
So petrifying means terrifying or turns you to stone?
It's induced medical terror. It's like a Nazi drug. It's really wicked. I mean, to have yourself feel the emotional terror that Haldol can induce, it is a chemical reaction that is induced.
Do you think it produces more emotion? I thought Haldol kind of puts a big blanket on all your emotion.
No, it's the kind of Haldol that they give me induces anxiety and fear. I mean, it's like the most terrible torture that I have ever experienced.
Now, during that 5-day period, you got shot up with Haldol initially?
Yeah, the first time, yeah.
And after that, did you suggest that you wanted some other medication, that you had some objections to Haldol because of side effects?
No, I just went through the game just to get out the other end. I just played along with whatever they gave me, and I didn't make any complaints. And I just wanted out the other end so I could get back onto my holistic diet.
Have you been incarcerated here in Santa Cruz County on 5150s?
Yes, definitely.
Last time that happened was?
Oh, God, what was that time? It was just recent. Oh yeah, I was at the ocean, and I guess they said I was playing in traffic, is what they said. But whenever they get a hold of me, they have my whole driver's license goes through a computer, and they know that I'm, psychiatric worthy. So they just take me there.
And when was this?
This was probably about 3 months ago.
And were you forcibly medicated?
There? No, I was suggested it, and if I refused it, they would make me stay longer, so I always take it with them.
Were you shot up, or were you simply pilled up?
Not this time. I have been forcibly put in Harbor Hills and put on Haldol forcibly, but this time I was released pretty quick.
Any general commentary about how people are treated who are psychiatrically seized in Santa Cruz County?
Well, it's horrible. We're like, you know, it's like animals, cagey animals, but it's like less than that. You're treated like you're a little kid, and you don't have your rights, and they always talk to you as though you're insane, and they don't treat you with common decency and respect. And it's not fun being incarcerated, and especially all your opinions, like in this natural-based society of Santa Cruz, whenever I'm asking for this kind of, education or medical treatment, I feel it should be a right, not a privilege. And even at the privilege level, they're going to deny that that care exists. And that's really frustrating coming from my background, which I'm a herbalist. I'm a natural-based holistic person. And they've just run those rights over. I mean, there's just no regard for that at all.
Have you ever gotten involved in any anti-psychiatry organizing with other patients or other advocates?
Yeah, PERC and all those places are almost like, they're almost like lining on the coat of the fur. They just allow the psychiatric people to practice the way they practice. There's no good organization that I know about, Anti-Psychiatry Coalition, PERC, all these people, they have no teeth whatsoever. I think they almost work for the system. I mean, they're just ridiculous, really. There's not even a teaching about the rights of what we have. They're so ineffective.
Would you be interested in starting a new organization?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I want an international board in Geneva. I mean, I want to fly home to Stockholm, Sweden, where my son's at. I was married to a famous writer there. She's no longer with us, but I want an international board on this. I think the medical that they've taken out of my mind is in the millions. And where am I at with that? How come I'm not cured by all this money that they've used? And I don't have rights to go into a natural healing clinic in Sweden or here in California where it's luxury. I mean, it's just ridiculous what I've gone through. It's horrifying.
Is there any way people who want to have similar concerns and experiences, if you'd like, could get in touch with you? Do you have an email address? Or?
Oh, I'm always available. If you write Robert, I'm there. But if you want my email at Zorinfiles at Hotmail, you're welcome to that. But yeah,
Zorinfiles at hotmail.com.
It's Zorinfiles at hotmail.com. And I'm willing to go on to any kind of public radio show or anything really that exposes the monster, which is psychiatry. It's a monster.
Zoran, thank you.
Thank you so much, Robert. And thank you for your help around town. You're wonderful. You're the best.
I'm approaching a very questionable suspect group of individuals.
Mr. Robert Norris himself. Hello, Robert.
I like that hat, man.
Since I got this hat, you know what came with it?
Tell me.
I became the self-appointed mayor of San Lorenzo Park.
Well, it's about time we had a mayor around here. And this is
you. Got to keep the things together.
This is your city council.
I run the boys.
Now, is it true that you put in some surveillance cameras to make sure that people stay in line?
I hear tell they're doing it, but it has not happened as of yet, but in the near works is what I was told.
Sell pictures on the Internet? Is that the deal?
Yeah, well, I want to do some nudes for the police department's cameras and, you know, shit like that.
Making money for homeless causes?
Oh, of course.
Well,
throw a barbecue.
I knew you had it in you.
Well, just wait.
We're talking with
Ted Fleming, alias Bear.
And more about Bear in a moment. We have an incoming call. Hi, caller.
Hi, Museum Workshop at 293 Squid Row Alley. Lend a hand, Sunday, November 13th, 2:30 to 9:30. Playing in the Sand presents a fundraiser to help keep creative collective space open and operating. Free food, music, workshops, raffles, art, and culture.
Wow. And
they want everyone to come down and support them.
So run.
One
run,
other thing.
Hold it. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Let me get that again. Where is this happening?
Oh, Squid Row, 293.
Squid Row. And where is that?
Over by Goodwill Salvation Army, one of those over there behind the...
Oh, it's right behind the Red Lantern restaurant and the actors... The complex.
Yeah, where the Union used to be, but one street over there.
One street over from the old Union Cafe. Okay,
yeah.
And that's Squid Row, and the address again is?
293 Squid Row.
It's that little teeny alley right next to, between the restaurant and the Goodwill. Go ahead.
Yeah, someone dropped this for me today. But you know, after the Halloween bash,
hang on a second, caller. When is this again?
It's going to be Sunday, November 13th.
That's today.
2:30 to 9:30 today, yeah.
So it's from when to 9:30? I'm sorry.
2:30 to 9:30.
2:30 to 9:30, and what actually is this all about?
Fundraiser to help keep a creative collective space open and operating.
So it's a fundraiser for what group, you know?
Playing in the Sand, it says. I don't know these guys. They just seem to know me as an artist, and they dropped it off. So I'm, you know, we want Art Town. That's you know, drugged out town.
I mean, do we know if it's is there people come in and drop their money and leave? Is it a musical event? Is
everything? Yeah, free workshop, raffles, art, food, music, and culture.
Huh, 2:30 to 9:30 at Squid Row today. Okay, well, go ahead. You had something else you wanted to say about
Halloween. Well, you know, after the bloodbath on Halloween, I was a little kid holding on in the hate to my brother's hand, and it just flashed the memory back to me. Skippy was friends with my brother, and this was when Moby Grape and the Airplane, they actually came from his cognitive musical process. Those bands, Skip Spence, if you look back, you'll find out who he is. Well, there was the methamphetamine. Well, they didn't know what meth was at the time, and the hate suddenly switched to, like, something like happened to us on Halloween. And people were like, oh, my God, this is a peace town. How did that happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Skip was smart enough to go, wait a minute, what is this? Then he found out who did it. He knew the guy. Everybody knew the guy who did this knifing up on the hate, and they said, my God, this was a peace thing. And he traced it back. Well, who was it? What did he do? Some new drug. What is it? Meth. What's meth? We don't know, but it makes... it's a door to hell. This is exactly the conversation.
Gotcha.
And then he said, I traced it back. And where'd he get it, man?
Right.
Someone came up here and sold it to him. The government. What? The government? Yeah, the government. Don't touch that, you know, blank. But once that message got out to the hate, everybody dropped it, and there went their market.
Right.
No one bought that drug. And and it's like a cult. You know, we didn't have to tell. The hippies told the punkers because they were all our older brothers and sisters.
Right. So you're trying to get the message out here, and you are getting it out. We're talking to Madison again, right?
Yeah, I know. I live on the, you know.
All right. Well, let me roll Madison because I want to give a couple other people a chance. But
thank you for
the announcement.
Yeah, cultural thinking, you know.
Right on. So caller, phone lines are open in case people want to call in. That's at 427-3772. In case you're wondering, we're at 101.1 FM. In case you're all the numbers in your radio dial have gone out. We're also streaming at freakradio.org. If you want to contribute something to the station, or you've got a question for the station, or you want to apply for a show, you can go online at freakradio.org. You can mail a check to Post Office Box 7507, Free Radio Santa Cruz, Post Office Box 7507, 95061. You can leave a PSA on the voicemail, and it will probably play it for you. And the voicemail is 427-4523, 427-4523. Another caller here. Hi there, caller.
Excuse me?
You're on the air.
Oh, I am. Okay, I'll turn up the radio. This is Marianne.
Hey, Marianne, what's happening?
I just want to say that I have benefited from small dosages of some psychiatric drugs, only in the sense that I'm able to function and my life continues. I've also been overdosed by arrogant, and not all doctors or psychiatrists are arrogant, but there are an awful lot that are. I've been overdosed, almost killed by bad medication where they misdiagnosed me or tried something new, and saved my own life by refusing to take that last deadly pill, and then they would give up and switch me to something else.
Was this here, Marianne, was this here in Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Elsewhere. I've never been in court. As a matter of fact, I tried to check into the psych unit many years ago in Santa Cruz and was interviewed by a woman who I suspect was a social worker. And she went, oh, this is an interesting story. I wound up writing her a poem, and she said, now promise me, I was suicidal. She said, if you ever feel suicidal again, please call me. So I got home, and I felt suicidal again. I called. I was placed on hold. I was never able to get through to her. And then finally, I just, somehow, God gave me the strength of mind to laugh. I hung up and said, well, that's the end of that. And continued on.
This was in Santa Cruz.
Yeah. But I do want to say that I think some of the problem is dosage, and some of the problem is the wrong medication. We're each chemically different. And I'm not saying that I would necessarily, if I had had my druthers when I first got involved with the psychiatric system, I would have preferred being put on good food by which I mean whole grains, that sort of thing. And I wish they had handled it totally differently. Now, and that was when I was late 20s. Now I'm 63, and I'm hooked. I mean, I can't do without this medication. But I shop around for doctors who will let me monitor my own dose, who aren't going to be arrogant and say, you must take this or that. I've reduced my dose, AMA, against medical advice, many times. If I hadn't, I'd be a walking zombie. But there are doctors out there, and I've run into psychiatrists, even in psych units, in Ukiah specifically, who listen and who will change their prescriptions according to what you say. And then there, I would say the preponderance of them won't. And they have this thing about therapeutic dosage. I told a doctor when I was incarcerated in Seattle, which the young man who was on a while ago mentioned, Harborview, I told him I'm a lightweight. He said, oh, well, start very, he was trying to change my meds. He said, well, start very slowly. I said, that's good. And the first couple of days were good. I felt good. I'd come in suicidal for a change, distraught, sleep deprived, but he kept upping the dose to this, quote, prescribed medication, to the prescribed dosage, which, of course, is promulgated by the drug industry. And he wouldn't listen to me, and I finally wound up in bed. Nobody noticed. A friend who visited me said it didn't make any sense whatsoever. On these pills, I finally decided, well, I said I wanted to kill myself, so I guess they're doing it for me. But I got so sick that I finally refused to take the higher dose, and they switched me back to the drug I've been on for the preponderance of the last 30 or 40 years, I would say.
What's the drug?
Nabane.
Huh. We've had people on the air in the last 2 years talking about psychiatric medication
uh-huh.
alternatives, and it's not so much an attempt to say don't take psychiatric medication,
uh-huh.
although it talks about how it's a major racket, a huge
yes.
corporate business, and how it actually increases one's chronic susceptibility to quote psychosis. Even both the antidepressant
uh-huh.
medications and the atypical medications.
Yeah.
Because they increase the number of dopamine receptors in the brain.
Uh-huh.
And if you compare it by the national, I guess it's the international, World Health Organization stats in other
uh-huh.
countries, people who don't take these medications have a much higher, it's a significantly higher rate of recovery.
Yes.
Just
I
naturally,
would agree with
you know.
That.
And so, and the point is that you would think that, well, psychiatrists would take this into account, have some alternate methods they're thinking
of. Arrogance.
But it's not just arrogance, it's a financial interest, too, because
uh-huh.
psychiatry and the drug lobbies
uh-huh.
are vastly intertwined, and there have been changes, as Robert Whitaker pointed out, in the way that the FDA operates since
uh-huh.
the 50s. But
uh-huh.
I appreciate your calling in, Mary, and want to conclude?
I want to say one more thing. The young man who was on a couple minutes ago mentioned Haldol, that it was the hell for him. Well, I took Haldol for several years, a very, very, very small dose. A doctor, I will say a good doctor, who listened to me when I told him I'm a lightweight. And I was very highly functional and had no side effects at all, I think. But I definitely agree with you. As with any drug, there's a rebound effect when you stop it.
Well, the real question, Marion, is whether, you know, we can force, pressure, or
yeah.
encourage, or just ourselves independently work on alternative modes
uh-huh.
to these, you know, essentially opportunistic social control devices.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what they
that
are. They
too.
Aren't really healing devices at all.
Right.
They're a way of getting people who are, for example, giving out literature in the Capitola Esplanade and perhaps in a fashion that some people consider objectionable
uh-huh, uh-huh.
and who then, you know, who may get a little loud with you and
uh-huh.
when you talk to them, expectorate out in your face by mistake, or you know, I mean, they get. I'm talking about Chris, but I'm also thinking of, you know, I mean, I think that they're, if you're really concerned about friends, people you care about, not just people you want off your back, then you need to look for this. And I appreciate your calling. Bye bye. I'm rolling. Sorry about that, Mary. I got to get moving here because into the studio has, I've got a guest here. It's what the heck is this guy's name? I think Harrison Ford. Is that your name? What's your name, sir?
Bob Patton from the Human Rights Organization.
Oh, darn. I
have to admit.
Forget it. Sharon Stone is what I'm looking for here.
I have to admit I wasn't listening to the entire program, so you can do some lashes to me. But I did hear some people making announcements of events upcoming, and if it hasn't been spoken to yet, they have an event coming up on November the 19th, and that's the Human Rights Organization's event. Has it been spoken about yet?
No, it hasn't been spoken about. We did talk about the November 18th event, which is, of course, National Stand Down Day against the criminal war of aggression in Iraq, the bloodbath that is going on every day over there. Actually, there's a couple I want to quickly mention. Not only is there a Capitola Recruiting Center event that's happening 2:30 to 3 to 5 on 41st Avenue, there's also a panel, which Media Watch, I believe, is throwing 2 to 3 p.m. at the Vets Hall. Film from Camp Casey, followed by a panel with filmmakers and activists, including Ann Simonton, who is a free radio programmer, by the way, folks. And all are welcome to join Women in Black Vigil, which is every Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. That'll be later in the day on November 18th, downtown across from the Cinema 9 Pacific Avenue and Cooper Street. They've moved from the, I guess it's a more frequented area. That sounds pretty good to me. Also, on the 13th, today at noon, which is coming up in 45 minutes, there's going to be a documentary on the Israeli wall, and that's Fallujah, the Hidden Massacre. Sunday at 11:15, starting right now, meeting in front of the Nickelodeon. Support the showing of this film, or if you oppose it, go there too. You guys can duke it out. That's down at the Nickelodeon, 210 Lincoln Street. Bob Patton, you're back on again with the Saturday event coming up. The Human Rights Organization is planning to engage in some more ranting about our overly privileged and pampered homeless population. Is that what you're talking about again?
Well, today in particular, I was out trying to connect with other homeless individuals and people who support or have concern about the homeless. And I did stop by the basement of the Veterans Hall because I had heard a gentleman considering himself a preacher was having a Sunday morning feed. Food.
Dennis Adams.
Dennis Adams. Sorry, I forgot your name, Dennis. Unfortunately,
the Potter's Hand. Actually.
Unfortunately, he took offense to my talking to the homeless folks that were there and threw me with no chance for any kind of defense, threw me out on my ear in with some of my Vietnam veteran friends watching with their mouth gaped open.
Too much.
So anyways, I went ahead outside and I encouraged those inside to come out and meet with me, some of which did, and I advanced this event on them. I advanced the information for the event on them, and they seem to be apologetic for him and interested. I find a lot of interest and people wanting to get involved. Unfortunately, I must have caught him at the wrong time, or he has a really strict policy for having no political material brought into his space. But he really was quite rude and quite insistent. I let him have his space at this time.
Did you tell him you were a vet?
I didn't think that was necessary. I got the reaction from my vet friends with the mouth open looking at me. I'm sure it's not going to be...
How many people were at this meal?
It was just the beginning of it, so there was only... Well, I do have the name of the cook, who turns out to be... one of the relatives of the Nelsons, the Loudon Nelson Center. His name is Stephen Nelson, and he was quite interested in and is going to come by and help with the event. But
talk about the event, but I'd like to go back to this thing. For those who are interested in remonstrating with the misguided Dennis, it sounds like misguided, although I have to go to him to talk to his side of the story, because I like Dennis personally. And it sounds like he screwed up here. This is still happening in the basement of the Veterans Building. There's still a meal going on right now?
Right now it was, I would say it was an hour and a half ago when I was there. I would assume they may still be there, but I don't know exactly the time of their event.
Well, they used to hold pretty good meals at the Loudoun Nelson Center, and then they held them on the street. And there wasn't a lot of hassle. I guess what he had a knee-jerk reaction the minute you walked in with paper. He ran up to you and started, he put you in an arm lock and escorted you to the door. I mean, what happened there?
Well, actually, I feel pretty comfortable at the place because being a Vietnam veteran, I've been there many times, and I just familiarly walked in and began to talk to people that I knew and didn't know and trying to engage, particularly I saw people who were involved in the feed there, and it was only after I'd spoken for several minutes to several people that he pushed his way through, but he got pushy about it when he arrived to the area I was talking to these people and insisted I cease and get the hell out of there. Oh, he didn't say it that way, but
he didn't just ask you to stop talking, he asked you to leave?
Leave.
Did he ask you if you were a vet?
No, he didn't.
Did he say why he wanted you to leave?
No politics, no activism in his church.
Church, huh? I see. Well, it is Sunday, and did you offer to maybe do the call call to prayer, or maybe I don't know, assault, burn a few abortion clinics?
Unfortunately, no. That may have been something to do, but I did explain to him I didn't think we were going to be able to move forward on solving any of these problems around homelessness and homeless rights without us coming together. And I tried to explain to other people. He insisted on me getting out and walking away. But this event particularly that's coming up on the 19th, I want to get away from
this. Talk about that.
I want to get away from the sides. I don't care about, you know, the Christians thing and the pagans thing. I don't care about the Democrats and the Republicans. This is going to be about the victims. And what can we do as a community, the homeless victims of these legislation in this community, trying to open up some critical space or some space where some critical analysis can be done around these topics. I mean, something we don't get from our Santa Cruz politics. We need to confront the issues. Here are some of the topics that I've suggested be talked about. One would be civil engagement, and that means actually getting out there and doing some hands-on work in the community around the issue. Maybe a little bit less political than some would like, but let's talk about some other things. Let's talk about actual homeless rights and how that stacks up with the Bill of Rights. Let's talk about some of the local economic and social apartheid. And I use that word because we can't legally talk about classism. But there is obviously a problem with both economic and social status that is unfair and unequal.
What do you mean we can't legally? What do you mean we can't legally talk about classism?
Well, in court cases, I think you're not allowed to use that terminology. So I want to be realistic about this. What we have is economic and social apartheid. I think that's just a better terminology to use since we can't go much further than just our own personal talk on that. Local political, civil, and legal actions are some of the projects I'd like to see come out of this. And we do have money after the event that will apply to some of the actions that are brought forth by either papers or verbal requests to our organization after this event on the 19th. Let me give you a rundown on it. It's going to start open to the public at 3:30 for food. That's Carol Moon, who's a vegan cook, is going to be there cooking. Most of the product will be bought at the Homeless Garden. Actually, if somebody wants to help volunteer, the kitchen is going to open up at 2:30 and be closed at 4:30. Serving will start at 3:30 in room 3 and open to the public. I talked to Food Not Bombs, and they're interested in helping in the kitchen. And any food that's remaining or overbought will go to them for their San Lorenzo Park Sunday feed. I went by there today, but I didn't see them. I might have been a little early, so I'll go back by there when I leave here. And I have talked to some of the SAFE members. Those are the traveling minstrels they don't travel that much. They pretty much are in front of New Leaf on Wednesday. And they may come and do, I'm hoping they're going to come and do some open mic. There are going to be two.
This is all on Saturday, November 19th.
Saturday, November 19th.
Okay. Nelson, it's all free, right?
That's correct. Free, free, free.
With some food and music.
Food and music, all free. But I'm not sure we're going to have anything like that. Jack and Jay are going to have a little bit of acoustic music with a hint of social protest. The speakers will start around 4:30. Local civil rights attorney Kate Wells will be speaking on the current status of the Santa Cruz downtown ordinances and possible legal strategies. Linda LeMasters from Housing Now will talk about how housing crisis affects the homeless. And what I'm saying is the event is meant to be both broad enough for those with national interests and specific enough to appeal to those who understand that their immediate quality of life depends on issues being taken care here at home in Santa Cruz. Something we don't get from our leadership.
Sounds interesting. There goes my mic again. Sorry about that, folks. If anybody has any questions for Bob at the Human Rights Organization, which I guess you've been meeting for a couple years now, every 1:45 at the Homeless Service Center out on Coral Street.
Right. We got together about two and a half years ago and put together this campaign to try to make some positive effect on the suffering from the downtown ordinances, the anti-homeless legislation that our so-called liberal city council and liberal city leaders continue to make what homeless people have to do that live outside illegal, and which makes our job even harder because now we're supposedly advocating for criminals.
Yeah,
all the way around needs to be changed so we can call ourselves a community again. We're still looking for individuals and groups to become involved at this time. We need help from volunteers at both ends of the event and in the kitchen. We're offering table space for groups and individuals we want to put together a short list of speakers. So anyone with suggestion, please contact us. Or if you want to get involved as a speaker or you want to have your group represented there. We meet each Saturday from 1:45 p.m. to 2:45 p.m. at 115 Coral Street in the dining hall. Our phone number is 425-4467. And you can leave an email, a voicemail there, and someone will get back to you within a few hours.
So the number for the Human Rights Organization is 425-4467. You meet every Saturday, 1:45 to 2:45 at Coral Street in the dining bay of the Homeless Service Center. You mean you risk loitering out there near those no loitering signs?
Months ago, we talked with the Homeless Service Center board and Ken Cole himself, and they invited us to use the facility to be able to meet with and interviews from homeless people as to how these laws affect them and their lifestyle. So we appreciate being able to use that facility. It puts us right in their interface with the very folks that are the clients of the Homeless Service Center.
What kind of success have you had in bringing homeless people into these meetings? And I mean, I know that Huff, as a Huff member, I've noticed a diminishing attendance at Huff meetings. Of course, we are kind of wandering around. Well, Huff, by the way, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we've been, you know, ragging on some of the issues you've been talking about for many a year, and we meet every Wednesday morning, 8:30 to 10:30 in the breezeway, the atrium between the courthouse and the county building, right outside the metal detector, right outside the coffee cart, and we're finding, some regulars show up. You're one of them, Bob. You show up, and so do I, but and we get some people from court coming in. But in terms of kind of any massive outreach, I mean, homeless people organizing themselves, haven't seen much of that lately, or even, you know, coming to us for advice on that subject. What have you found?
We probably get on the average of a couple of homeless people coming by at each meeting, and not always are their concerns or their interests that we can help any. We do offer we can help people walk through if they have a ticket or a camping or a sleeping ticket, blanket ticket. We rarely can get attorneys to do anything to help them, but on the average, we get a couple people every meeting. And once again, whether or not we can have anything of positive effect on what they're asking us to do, but we are getting the interviews, the anecdotal stories we're looking at. That's a lot of the same thing you do on your street interviews. I mean, you're documenting a lot of what's going on with the homeless community. No one else is looking to find that out, so we're getting some of the same stories that you're getting of harassment and just making it hard for people to live in with that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, in fact, of course, the winter is coming up, which means the space for 40 people under the city's only emergency shelter program, which is the ISSP, Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, will increase from 40 to probably 150, 160 soon when the armory is opened. But, of course, that leaves the rest of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city limits out of luck. I keep repeating that figure because it's sort of the overwhelming reality. And the basic, I mean, it wouldn't be so bad, you know, some people say, well, you want to shelter all these people. We got a budget crisis. We got priority. It's a national problem, blah, blah, blah. And these are all true concerns. But the reality is also true that Santa Cruz not only has the shelter crisis, it has a law that criminalizes people sheltering themselves or protecting themselves in protective encampments or even falling asleep or even covering up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night. So we have a whole criminal set of laws which allows the police to, while the tourists are watching, be nice, or, you know, when they to people who are playing the game the way the police want, not bother them. And this goes for street performers as well. But when the police decide they want to crack down, they have the whole structure of broad laws passed by the Rotkin Matthews Council. I should say the Rotkin Matthews Fitzmaurice Council, because he was involved in that too, our Green Party guru, Tim Fitzmaurice. And they can, you know, they can use what they want, because most of the sidewalks are forbidden for sitting. You can't sit within 14 feet of a building, which rules out all the sidewalks outside Pacific Avenue that are in any commercial district. Because their sidewalks there are 10 feet wide. So what are you going to go? You can sit in the middle of the street, I guess, according to the downtown ordinance. Similarly, you can only perform with a display device within 10 feet of a, 10 feet beyond the 10-foot radius. So again, that leaves out any performing in commercial districts outside the broad sidewalks of Pacific Avenue. And go ahead.
And that's where I like to bring up the fact that it's an apartheid. If anything else, nothing else, it's a spatial, and I mean like the space around you, not like outer space, but the space around is a spatial apartheid. And this city council, these lawmakers, are making these anti-homeless laws that restrict our use of public space, unprovoked on behalf of business interests. That, to me, is the bottom line problem of this community councils. They have incorporated, and I mean like, you know, a corporation, they have incorporated their ideology to support their business ties.
It should be distinguished. This is not the same kind of apartheid you had, for example, in South Africa, where the police are rigorously, or in the South with respect to blacks, because there, you know, you risked life and limb if you went into a colored restroom and you were, well, you went into a white restroom and you were colored, and you probably would get hassled if you went into a colored restroom if you were white. And in South Africa, you step off the sidewalk, as you see in the movie Gandhi, you get shoved off the sidewalk. I think that was also in India, too, in some respects. But what you have here instead is you have the whole system set up invisibly so it can be activated at the whim of a police officer. and is otherwise ignored. So you have the appearance of liberality. You see musicians, for example, sitting up and down Pacific Avenue on different occasions, particularly Friday night, for instance. Some of them will be seated with a sign, or panhandlers, peaceful panhandlers, seated with a sign, which is illegal. Under the downtown ordinances, it is not legal to sit down on any public property with a sign that says, seeks money for food, or seek money, or give me some money for bud, or help. Those signs are illegal under the laws passed in 2002. You can't do it from a seated position. You can stand up and hold a sign, as the 74 or 5-year-old John Telfair had to do. You may remember John, the guy we went out to lunch with at one point, Bob, who's an activist with the Mad People's Liberation Front. He had to stand there with a sign. This is elderly man trembling with a sign because he's not allowed to sit down with a sign. Now, you might say, well, you know, we say people sitting down all the time. The answer is yes, but they risk a $162 ticket if they do that. They risk humiliation and criticism by the police. They don't know, I mean, because the law, and at any time, the police can selectively go after people they want. I want to ask you, Bob, now that you're in the studio, anything more you want to say on that subject? Okay, reminding folks again, Human Rights Organization event, Activism, Politics, and Homelessness, Carol Moon, Cook and Vegan, Protest Music by Jack and Jay, a street art show, November 19th, that's Saturday, the day after you've been out there protesting the war at the Capitola Recruiting Center. Then you can jump, the next day you can wander over at 3:30 to 6 p.m. to the Loud Nelson and, you know, chow down with the Human Rights Organization activists. I'll be there. And I think this will be mentioned on Indie Media, but I just got an email today from my producer, Becky Johnson, which says that Indie Media has imposed some conditions that they finally expose the specific conditions under which they will allow her to post stories on Indie Media again. Indie Media, for those who don't know, is a generally good website with some serious exceptions. At www.santacruz.indymedia.org. And that's where I'm reading, for example, these notices about the anti-war activities that are happening today and on Friday. And then, of course, I don't know if you posted something about the Human Rights Organization on Indie Media, or was I supposed to do that?
I haven't as yet, that this will be taken care of. I have PSA pretty much squared away. Now, that's what I've been reading on your program that'll be posted on Indie Media, and actually there is it is on the calendar, on the RAD calendar through the Indie Media events calendar, and it'll be in the Good Times on Wednesday, both in the community events, and there'll
so
be a line ad.
So Indie Media is a place where a lot of us post stories, particularly about homeless issues, that we couldn't otherwise put out to some, you know, to other activists in the community. Well, Indie Media has objected to Becky Johnson's position. She's my producer and a writer, quite a prolific writer for Street Spirit newspaper, as well as a writer on local issues in other publications as well, because she has a dissenting position on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, and because she has associations which Indie Media doesn't like. I don't much like them either, but I don't feel that's a basis for discriminating against her writings on homeless issues, which to me is really a disservice to the community. And I've talked about this before. The reason I bring it up now is because Indie Media has a meeting tonight, 7 to 9 p.m., Sunday the 13th. It's meeting at the Resource Center for Inaction, or they call it the Resource Center for Nonviolence, which does provide meeting space to a number of local groups. I'll give them that. They don't want to take any stand on local issues about, for example, poor people and the downtown ordinances, how police mistreat folks. No, the Resource Center for Nonviolence is for nonviolence elsewhere, not here, apparently, at least in terms of how the police treat the homeless community, how the city laws treat the homeless community. We don't hear from them about that. Though I no doubt some people at the Resource Center for Nonviolence are very sympathetic to the Human Rights Organization's positions, as well as my belief, you know, our beliefs that there should be no further criminalization of the homeless than naturally happens when people are denied shelter and have no access to one would hope be the basic requirements of life. Let them at least find it themselves. Anyway, Indie Media is meeting today at 7 to 9 at the Resource Center. And I also got at the same time from Becky a statement that she is banned from attending the Santa Cruz Indie Media meeting. You may remember she attended an Indie Media meeting. It was open, and there was a. She actually gave us a report about that meeting. I don't know how much of it got out on free radio. They promised to meet again with her to get specific about what they didn't like about her posts, which I think is, if you're gonna delete or hide someone's post on a community website like this, even though it's not a government website and there's no guarantee that you get access to it, and you can go and start your own website, yes, you can, you know, that's all very true. It's like the newspaper guy saying, hey, you don't like it, go start your own newspaper, you know. We got freedom of the press, as J.J. Liebling says, for anyone who owns one. Very easy. The fact of the matter is, it does raise, I think, appropriately, some eyebrows when particular activists are banned from what seems to be a supposedly somewhat open community website. I differ with Becky in her saying that it's a free speech website, because I don't think it is. They don't claim, for example, to allow the Klan to do a lot of posting and extreme right wing groups, and they have a perspective. They're an activist leftist website. Still, the idea of banning Becky because they don't like her position, which is a pro-Israeli government position, or some would say a pro-Zionist position, she would probably say a pro-Israel and human rights position, which I disagree with, because they don't like that position, they ban her on all these, on every single issue, is, to me, not just overkill, but in fact is censorship. Now, it's interesting, they responded to her request. They said they were going to meet with her, but they didn't. They met with her at this Indie Media open meeting, and she wanted to know why she was being specifically singled out, what was the problem, and they said they'd meet with her later. They never did, apparently. Instead, they met themselves privately, and they came up with this policy statement, this letter they sent her. I'm going to read a little bit about it. I want to get your reaction to it, Bob. This may put you, you may no longer be welcome in activist quarters if you comment on this, but Dear Ms. Johnson, recently the Santa Cruz Indie Media Editorial Working Group met and discussed the aforementioned items. Group came to a consensus on the following conclusions. One, out of concern for the historical record, in light of the fact that the article is no longer prominently displayed, we think the article Becky's Brain needs to remain visible. This was a sort of a savage attack on Becky personally, as well as some of her views.
Yeah, I saw that, and I thought that was just about the most unprofessional thing I've ever seen on Indie Media. It wasn't even an article.
You can always check out Becky's Brain on Indie Media if you want. However, let's skip that whole thing. Their justification is the article is personal, but it's also satirical, based on direct quotations from her writings. Because she's a recognized media personality, she's by law subject to more media scrutiny than the average citizen. Finally, there are extensive comments about the article, which would be lost if the article is hidden. One of the commentators is Johnson, who refutes portions of the article she disagrees with. Therefore, we feel that hiding this article would be unnecessary at this time. They don't mention the fact that Johnson is banned from any further comment on the article, but other people are not. So obviously, it's unfair. I don't know what they're thinking. I know people who are on this collective who are otherwise, I think, very rational, fair people, and it seems peculiar that they're taking this position here. By the way, I've talked to neither Becky nor any Indie Media people before bringing up this subject on the air today because, frankly, I would like to see a debate between them, but I don't know that I can get either of them. I probably get Becky to agree, but I don't know if I get Indie Media to agree. If they want to agree to meet with her, I don't know if they're going to agree to meet and talk about it. So, anyway, moving along. In regards to, this is again Indie Media's letter to Becky Johnson, in regard to reestablishing Ms. Johnson's publishing privileges by unbanning her IP address, we ask Ms. Johnson to abide by the following requests. A, people may not always like the distinctions that our editorial volunteers draw as to what is appropriate for the site. Nonetheless, we request she respect the work and judgment of our editorial volunteers and stop the harassment campaign that she has been engaging in. Ms. Johnson has a history of yelling at volunteers and repetitively calling and emailing, flooding Indie Media volunteers. This constitutes abusive and stalking behavior, and it must end. I have had some serious arguments with Becky. In fact, she recently hung up on me. But nonetheless, I don't regard her as a stalker or an abusive person. She has strong views on some subjects, and she doesn't like to be censored, but she's not abusive as an individual. Have you found, what's your feeling about this, Bob? Am I wrong? If you've been stalking you lately, what's your story?
Well, like you, I have no alignment with her political, in whatever her intent is on backing Israelis, mainstream type of
ideology, I do not associate with that. I do not associate with the U.S. mainstream ideology and policy either. I particularly am inclined to stay away from any kind of theology, theocracy, anything controlled by religion, and so that repulses me at that level. Although, speaking about what's going on with indie media, I think this is some kind of little ugly political correctness on the left, and but I'm sure the right wing is loving this split, so I think it needs to be worked out to where both parties have their say and have some, try to gain some respect for each other.
So the basis on which Indie Media letter, at least this letter that was forwarded to me by Becky, suggests that they will allow her to again repost is she has to stop the harassment campaign. They also say she has provided personal information about Santa Cruz independent media activists to groups which have expressly tried to defeat progressive causes and have threatened to harm activists. If Ms. Johnson wishes to publish on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website again, she needs to publicly disassociate herself from such groups, including, but not limited to, DAFCA and Discover the Network. These are right-wing websites that, I guess, DAFCA is particularly concerned about kind of pro-Israeli government positions, or perhaps further to the right of the Israeli government. I'm not entirely clear about those distinctions. And finally, Ms. Johnson uses the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom mailing list and her public access television show Club Cruise to disseminate false information about Indie Media and Indie Media volunteers in an effort to defeat independent media efforts. We request Ms. Johnson stop using these forums to disseminate false information about Indie Media and Indie Media volunteers. Again, nothing is specific about what the false information is, but she's accused of disseminating false information. So once she, agrees to stop yelling and agrees to stop beating her wife, she agrees to stop all this bad stuff she's been doing with the indie media people, completely unprovoked, of course. I mean, she just ran up to them one day and started screaming at them, probably, is what happened. I'm being sarcastic because I know that didn't happen. In fact, you know, there's a whole history of her having her stuff cut from indie media. If she also severs her ties with groups that I don't particularly like, but I do believe in freedom of association. You know, that's one of those old things that, you know, old McCarthy didn't like it either. He would start smearing you all over the place because of your association with communist and pro-communist groups or liberal groups. But that was considered to be a bad thing. You go see the movie, what is it, the one about Edward R. Murrow, Good Night and Good Luck, which is playing downtown. Good movie. You see the kind of, well, it's a good critical analysis of that kind of approach. And then finally she has to stop criticizing indie media in her show, or as they put it, disseminating false information, again without specifying exactly what the specifics are. Again, like the stuff that they say that was deleted, her stuff on the website, they don't say what and they don't say why. And the reason they don't, obviously, is because it's an ideological decision. It is not a decision that has to do with, you know, any real character assassination or any real significant harm done to anybody here locally. That's my view. Then again, the conclusion is, if Ms. Johnson would like to follow through on these requests, she may post an article on Santa Cruz Indie Media explaining her decision to work in solidarity with Indie Media, her decision to break away from DAFCA and Discover the Network, and to stop trying to defeat Indie Media efforts. After she has done this, her IP address will be reinstated. In other words, when she's confessed that she's not a communist and she's no longer part of the international communist conspiracy, she can once more possibly be employed. Now, you know, once she repents before the government committee, they will let her back into a position of privilege and power.
Yeah, once again, this is some ugly political, you know, from the left, ugly political correctness.
This is wrong. Now here we hear an interesting justification for censorship. The issue of censorship. This is again the letter Becky got. They're a little bit sensitive about this censorship issue. Instead of saying, well, we'll fucking cut what we want because we believe that the left view is not being appropriately represented, and we'll represent it. You want the right view? Go watch Fox News. That'll be the honest approach. In other words, we're gonna censor you. But do we get this from indie media? No, we don't. What do we get? What we get is this. Another issue which has been raised by Ms. Johnson is the issue of censorship. Specifically, she claims the indie media is guilty of censorship. Volunteers have a responsibility to moderate the content of the website, website, moderate, right? Articles which are found to be in violation of editorial policy will be marked as hidden and moved off the newswire. If the editorial volunteers did not moderate the site based on our editorial policy and principles, the site would be effectively useless. We have to censor. We have no choice. Finally, the definition of censorship, according to the new Webster's Lexicon Dictionary, is the institution or practice of censoring. When you examine the word censor, there are two definitions. Well, it sounds like a lawyer got involved here. One for a noun and one for a verb. The definition for a verb is to examine in the capacity of a censor to delete offensive material from those who ban. The definition of the noun form is a person empowered to suppress publications or to excise any matter thought to be immoral, seditious, or otherwise undesirable. And the aforementioned definitions, indie media's editorial practice do not amount to censorship, you see. We can prove this mathematically and scientifically. First and foremost, when you examine the word censor and its associated terms, you notice it is related to an official person who bans editorial, whereas we're just a bunch of anonymous people who don't say who we are or why we're doing what we do. So therefore, because we're not official, it's not censorship. I like this. Indie media represents nearly the opposite. It is a forum for stories and reports that may get censored in the corporate news, except, of course, for homeless stories that Becky tries to post. A censor, by dictionary definition, is someone empowered, usually a government official, to officially ban material. Volunteers from indie media don't have the power to ban anything. They may choose to move certain articles to the hidden section, which is still viewable but not prominent. They can also delete, and they put them in the deleted section, a minor distinction, which is not, unless they've changed their policy at Indie Media. Becky Johnson wants to claim Indie Media is guilty of censorship. It is obvious Indie Media doesn't have the capacity to censor. Obviously it does. It can censor its own website and does so all the time. I don't know what they're talking about. On the other hand, Ms. Johnson, who co-hosts her prime television show with an individual who claims to be a part of Homeland Security, is trying to eliminate Santa Cruz Indie Media's editorial prerogative through a vicious campaign of rhetoric. I don't think Becky is suggesting the government move in and stop indie media from having the power to do it. I think she's denouncing the choices they're making. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Bob and Robert.
Hey, Robert. Theodora checking in.
Hey, Theodora.
And, yeah, I'm, you know, I don't really have a horse in the race, but I'm listening to you go on and on about this. And it was my understanding, or at least the piece of information that made me realize that folks had a legitimate beef against Becky, was the information that she had actually given information on other activists to one of these right-wing websites. And they posted this information, and that, you know, people felt like they were put in jeopardy by her actions. And, you know, I'm assuming they're telling me the truth. Maybe you have something else to say, but if this is at the heart of what the concern is, then that needs to be talked about as well.
Sure. I mean, I'll tell you what we're talking about. We're talking about the name of a Free Radio Santa Cruz programmer, who everybody knows anyway. But, you know, I think it was because it upset the people in the collective and because it upset the programmer, I think it was a mistake on Becky's part. She wasn't aware she was providing any kind of secret information. She thought it was public. It had to do with, you know, a debate on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, and Becky obviously took a different view, and she was critical of the programmer. She didn't call for her death, her execution, her beheading, anything of that sort. She probably spoke sarcastically or perhaps critically of the programmer at some point. But, you know,
well, that's legitimate, but what I was told is that she provided, you know, personal information on this
person information
and other persons that wound up getting posted on
it was the name of the programmer, you know, and we're talking about, you know, some programmers use their real names, other ones don't, and there's sensitivity at Free Radio to this because we are an illegal operation, as you know, and in theory this could be used to go after us, but in fact the FCC knows our names.
Well, I would agree with that, but yeah, as so. I said, you know, is all that she provided the name of the person that she was having a dialogue with, or I was told that she provided address, phone number,
information
that would allow this person to be targeted.
No, it wasn't an address, phone number, but it was, I mean, I think Becky fucked up, and I think Becky acknowledged that she made a mistake on this. She didn't acknowledge it to the extent, obviously, that Indie Media wants her to, which is, and Free Radio for that matter, although they took a different stand, and they've simply rewritten history and claimed she's not a collective member, which is absurd in my view. But nonetheless, What they wanted her, to do is they wanted her to disassociate herself from DAFCA, which you can go to the DAFCA website and see her name is on there. I mean, I think, as I've told Becky, I think some of her views are racist. I really do, on this Israeli issue. But, you know, there's a lot of people I disagree with that I talk to on the radio.
Right, and you're very, you know.
And I agree with them on other issues. And mm-hmm. we are educating and communicating with each other. I think
we should be able to do that,
yeah.
and you know,
yeah.
not go into this totally polarized kind
yeah.
of thing. But
yeah.
you know, as I said, you know, I'm just an observer. But the person I talked to, I think, who was the programmer who, you know, got
yeah. Yeah.
her name posted, you know, felt it was more serious than just they felt it was a serious.
We had several. We had several shows on this issue where
right.
actually.
Right, and I just wanted to bring in that because the way you're talking about it,
it
seems like you know nobody. You know, this is just a kind of a,
capricious and malicious decision.
Well, no, it just seems like it's more about he said she said. But when you understand that somebody felt very undermined by a decision Becky made to have. You know, that led to information about her being posted on a right-wing website, and this person is an activist in the Israeli-Palestine issues, and you know, it just felt, it's like being a doctor and having your name posted on an anti-abortion site. You feel targeted.
Right,
and that's a clear, you know, that's not just a arcane little discussion
yeah, but
about.
Theodora, wouldn't the best approach be to, in essence, you know, discuss it publicly on the website to say, is this the appropriate way for an activist to behave? What's your defense? And Becky would give her defense, and there would be a discussion.
Well, I agree with that.
You know,
that
and,
part
instead,
needs
they
to
cutting
happen.
Her off completely for any kind of and it's like we're going to punish you. We're going to ostracize you. We're going to cut you out of the dialogue. And some of it, let's be candid here. I've told Becky I feel she's approached this thing wrong. She needs to recognize she's working with activists who have very, very strong views, and perhaps properly so, on the Palestinian-Israeli issue. I mean, you and I probably share the same view, which is probably the opposite of Becky's view. Maybe not. I don't know what your view is. But she needs to realize that there are people who also are wary of her associations with people like Lee Kaplan, who's a DAFCA website guy and who she has on her Club Crew show, is a big pro-Israeli government guy. And, you know, and also is interested in, you know, he's been aggressive in, you know, criticizing and going on campus and criticizing speakers who come there. And you know, she needs to reassure people that she can keep confidences and maintain
ties
on both
sides.
Well,
and totally. And when you understand that that's one of the core issues here. It's not just what she thinks or what her attitude is. It's an actual it's actually something that she did that other people felt put themselves in jeopardy. And but again, you know, can't we all just get along? Can't we have the discussion? I think that's an important issue to raise. But as I said, you've been going on and on about this, and people need to understand that there was a real action on Becky's part that affected others and pushed this whole thing to the level that it is. And Becky bears responsibility for that, and for everything we do, there are consequences. And more what I was interested in was broadening the discussion so people understood that it wasn't just, you know, Becky's opinions that got her in this position, that she took an action that you know, affected others, and everything spins out from there.
It wasn't just that. She was being deleted before this so-called.
Well, then those are longer-term things that
I mean, she was being deleted back in March because they didn't like her posts. I mean, Becky, admittedly, is very, you know, outspoken and responds immediately to criticism, perhaps a little
mm-hmm.
thin-skinned, you know, who knows. But, she, you know, we all have a right to be as we are. I just think the policy needs to be re-examined here, and it's
well.
For
those who go to those meetings,
people can go tonight. It's 7:30 to 9:30 at the at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, but not Becky. Apparently, she's been told she's not welcome at the meeting.
Well, okay. I mean, you keep the discussion going, but
Oh, I'm glad you called in, Theodore. Your questions are pertinent. In fact, as I said, I'd like to have, you know, indie media doing its defense. But, you know, the real question is, in spite of any of this stuff, is it relevant to stop censoring people's stories on homeless issues because you don't like what they did in some other realm? You know, take them to task for it, criticize them for it, but don't say, we're going to punish you by not letting you talk about public issues that need to be discussed. I just don't. To me, that's wrong. Even if everything they say is accurate about Becky.
Well, are you going to this meeting? Since you feel so strongly, are you going to this meeting?
No, I don't think I can change their minds. I mean, I know these people. These are friends of mine. These are people I like. These are people I work with. They are, I think, just. You know, I don't know what to do about it, Theodora.
You're talking about it, and that's something. But again, people have the right to association, and especially having been part of the marijuana movement,
they can exclude whoever they want.
I'm very aware that that the very likelihood that we had people in our meetings that weren't revealing who they were or all that goes with the territory. But if we could have kept people away that we knew were problematic, I would have, because you're doing work that can make you very vulnerable, and if you feel that you don't trust somebody in the community, you have a legitimate right to restrict that person's access to your meetings.
Well,
obviously, Becky has, created, some distrust there, that's how the world works. I mean, I don't want to say she's right, they're wrong, they're right, she's wrong. But the truth is, freedom of association does allow people who are doing political work to pick and choose who they want to do it with.
Sure.
And if they feel somebody puts them at risk, then that is a, legitimate.
We have to ask, however, what the consequences are in the community of false fears and apprehension.
Well,
that's what I'm asking.
That too. But anyway, yeah. I just wanted to
no, I
at least
that,
broaden
any,
the conversation
a little
bit.
Any other announcements while you're on the air about stuff coming up we should know about?
Nothing concrete. Just that. Nothing concrete at this point.
Hey, well, keep us posted.
Totally.
All right. Thanks. So. We may have covered this. I just wanted to. I'm looking over Becky's response to this decision. Again, we're not talking about the decision to have her in the inner councils of indie media, where she can get all the personal information. It's kind of outrageous. She has massive amounts of personal information on lots of people in this community. If she wanted to funnel it, she could dump it all into a website if she wanted. I mean, it's. I don't know. I just do not. Go ahead, Bob. You got a comment?
I'm just saying that. This is a bit about guilt through association has been a real thorn in the left, lefties kind of organizational skills all along. I mean, you have to be ready for that. You cannot have this kind of restriction from people just because they have some varying different ideas than you do on one or more issues that are just minute issues. For instance, I'm for public assembly, and I would back the rights of any organization, including some that are as despicable as the KKK, to march and protest as they like. But damn it, I'm going to be there with my stones to give my real opinion of what's going on. But I'm not going to ban them. I'm not going to support anything that's going to ban them from getting their information out to the public.
But let's be candid. Indie Media is not banning Becky from the public forum. It is only banning her from the Indie Media website. So, if a Klan member came to your group, Bob, and said he wanted to be a part of your group, and at the same time, wear a hood and, have all his Klan paraphernalia, would you allow that to happen? Would you allow him to post on your newsletter? Maybe even subjects not related to the Klan, but on some other subjects. Wouldn't that be a conflict for you?
That may be the deeper question. I'm going to have to consider that. I don't have an answer for you at this time, but I am definitely against guilt through association.
Yeah. I mean, and we're talking again. I have been going on about it at some length because I think it's an important issue, and it's come up again. And indie media has made what I think is just an inadequate response on this issue, and one that hurts people who are part of the homeless community or interested in learning more about it, because indie media is a prime source of information there. And it just seems also a mistake because it tends to discredit indie media, too. And for those who say that, you know, Becky is spreading false information about it, I mean, I'm talking about the same issues. You know, I guess, you know, people can go after me if they want on this issue. In fact, people suggested that when I defended Becky's right to be a member of the Free Radio Collective or to be recognized as to that's what she was, and there was a nearly unanimous, I was the only one dissenting, opinion that she was not a member of the collective because she had never officially been voted here or there. They changed the credentials in 1999, blah, blah, blah. To me, it was all cover for what was really an ideological and associational and also, I think, legitimate an apprehension issue by some members who are concerned about trust. You know, I mean, that was the real issue, and it was kind of being covered as a sort of a ploy to avoid the whole thing. Maybe it was a wise thing to do. I don't know. In the sense that, you know, it would have. There are some members who felt so intensely about it that they wanted to make what I think was a minor activity of Becky Johnson's in terms of this so-called exposure of one programmer's name that was already known. Anyway, I have a different point of view. I'm sure a number of Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcasters disagree with me. It's just wrong, both for Free Radio and indie media, to be banning people on this issue. And people want to hear this. I'm going to try to post, and I'm going to answer this caller in a moment, so hang in there, caller. I'm going to try to post the actual programs you can go to hear Free Radio spokespeople who disagree with Becky and who support the Free Radio policy talking about that issue, so you can actually hear in their own words what went down. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. Is this Bob?
Go ahead.
Robert, you know, your point out about Edward R. Murrow, is that movie was really good.
Uh-huh.
And then you guys ran the senator yesterday, that whole discussion about the FCC, and putting those two ideas together is really good.
Putting about...
Having people remember that Reagan was the one who took that portion out of the legislation where, you know, if you're going to post one idea on a public broadcasting site, you need to show the alternate view. And all of them need to get out of tit for tat from what I'm hearing right now and get back to, like, the issue. You know, what are your goals? What are your objectives? Can you see the gray?
Right.
And then one thing that I think is fabulous for the homeless that's happening here is the Women's Center that makes the wreaths and things. And it's sad to see them shoved out on the side of a park away from the mainstream sales year-round on Pacific Avenue. And I had the idea to help them go be brought to Pacific Avenue, that business of selling wreaths, the Garden Project, on Pacific, and I actually had Santa Barbara Umbrellas is willing to donate 3 or 4 umbrellas where they could set up on Pacific Avenue. And I got a hold of Emily. I left her all the messages and everything. And this is a free donation from another city, Santa Barbara Umbrellas in Santa Barbara. And no one gave me a call back.
Yeah.
You know, and if anyone's listening and you need a project for town, they need a coordinator to work between the homeless project and the city to, you know, because obviously you need a management type to kind of oversee it. And I did talk to one of the little homeless girls in town here. Everybody knows Booth with her earrings, but she just came up with every excuse not to do this. And if there's somebody who's homeless out there, the Farm and Garden Project director was very open to this. She was willing to create a position. And she said, well, those management types that are homeless, unfortunately, they get here, they get up, and they end up leaving. They don't stay with us very long. But if you have a vision and you're homeless, maybe it's a program that you take to every city around the country. You know, have them set up so they have a year-round site under the umbrellas. Because what made the Hate beautiful, what makes San Francisco beautiful, what made Santa Barbara beautiful is on the corners was the flower stand.
Right.
all over town.
Right. Remember that would be illegal probably in a lot of places up and down the avenue. And, of course, those wonderful flower vendors would have to go risk tickets at night under our current sleeping ban. So.
Well, what we need to do is make it legal. And, you know, not that they stay overnight. I mean, then, you know, we can argue on that. But, you know, you don't know I have an architectural background. And I went to Jerry Brown in 90-something before I got hit by a car and couldn't walk. And he offered me an entire studio room in his studio on Harrison in Oakland, because I explained to him, my feeling is the way to help heal the homeless is, one, to keep a shower and a phone. Two, even the simplest person can be. Even the most mentally, you know, disabled or special needs person can do these things. And maybe it needs to be some sort of center where there's cottage industry that, like, we have the herb farm and garden project
right. That
actually goes to the street. And there's small stuff like this.
Okay.
But maybe those small cottage industries need to eventually, I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, but you have to have a design plan, and you have to have a goal and a mission and a vision. And I just don't see that happening with our city council in areas that are extremely important that are at the street level.
Keep raising the issues, Madison. Thanks. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'm just going to finish off this indie media controversy, which I really have presented my view on, and Bob has weighed in. You've heard Theodora. Becky wrote a lengthy response to this, which, and maybe we can post it on the Huff website, since indie media does not allow her to post. I know I've tried to post stuff about homeless issues that she's written. Sometimes they let them on, sometimes they don't. Not clarifying why or when or what is allowed. And again, you know, I know this is a private, you know, this is a private website, like Theodora says. This, every group makes their own rules. I'm just concerned that I'd like to see some sensible resolution to this whole thing, other than telling a person to disassociate themselves from people that she's working with. You know, it just doesn't work with me. Anyway, but we can talk about this. I see a caller was attempting to call, and you can try again if you want, caller. I'm keeping my eye on the phone line, not as much as I should, but I'm doing that a bit. I'm going to Becky's letter to Indy Media, which denies she's been harassing any individual. She asks if there's any individual who would like to come forward and claim to have been the victim of her being yelling at her and repetitively calling and emailing Indy Media volunteers, or perhaps a log of those calls, or a single person would like to come forward and complain about a single call on a single occasion. She challenges them to do this. Who am I stalking? Who have I abused? These are serious charges. So she suggests that happen. I don't know if it's going to happen. I sort of doubt it. I'm kind of skipping through her letter. She says she's in favor of indie media efforts to run a people's newspaper, and she's spoken in favor of indie media on the indie media site on Free Radio, Street Spirit, Club Cruise, City Council, on the HEF website, numerous flyers. The claim that she's trying to eliminate Santa Cruz Indie Media's editorial prerogative through a vicious campaign of rhetoric. She denies it, says she's vigorously and deeply committed to Indie Media as a public forum, and where individuals with little access to traditional media can write, post, and comment on the events and issues of their locality. It should be the prime way the Santa Cruz community can talk to the Santa Cruz community. But with the current censorship, secret meetings, banishment, smear jobs, and favoritism, it is headed in the opposite direction. She remains heartily committed to ensure that freedom of speech, as well as a high level of accuracy in the information published to Santa Cruz Indie Media, is maintained. Her deep concern is the clear fact that a tiny group of mostly hidden individuals have hijacked it and are using it to smear and censor, thus making a mockery of the goals. Well, I don't know if I agree with that description of it. That's obviously, she's upset about it, and that's how she feels about it. She leaves her phone number and says she would like to have posted something about today, being the day that Happy John Dine was shot to death by Officer Connor Carey on the sidewalk in Front Street, but since her number is blocked at Indie Media, she can't. My voice is silenced, but so is Happy John's. That was yesterday, November 12th. And by the way, let's remember Happy John. You may remember Happy John yourself, Bob, a homeless guy who was an activist who was concerned about the rights of homeless people. He actually was housed when he was killed by the Santa Cruz Police Department at the corner of Front and Soquel. And he was shot dead, claimed he was waving a weapon around, brandishing it at the police. This was the cover story by Chief Belcher, by DA Art Danner. But, of course, every non-police witness disputed that account and claimed there was no weapon visible. He was brandishing nothing. A plastic gun was found by him afterwards. Several witnesses claimed that Officer Over had pulled the gun out and of his pants afterward and thrown it down on the sidewalk. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know that we have to remember that that Happy John Dine is dead. That happened in 1997. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Bob.
Damn, that thing just went screech.
Sorry about that.
Good morning, and
good
aloha.
Morning.
This is Gregory, Rhodes Scholar. Can we talk?
Please.
Oh. Well, I've been listening to your program with interest.
Okay.
Very good. Very good subjects. I want to give you a little heads up on what I hear is some clandestine effort to perhaps do a midnight ordinance passing against street musicians that I've been hearing rumors about.
Tell me about it.
Well, I was just informed by someone who knows somebody in City Hall, shall we say, that there's something afoot, or perhaps there's something afoot, that deals specifically with people's... musicians be able to play out on the streets. The ideal is further either eliminate them or push them out in the netherworld somewhere by hiring bands, you might say, to play in their stead, maybe on appointed days. So that's quite interesting.
Huh.
I have an interest in that, and I'd like to know, I have to find out, or we have to find out, how things sort of get moved around within the city council, under the radar.
Caller, perhaps what you could do is go to the downtown informant center, or information center, as they call themselves.
The informant center, that's funny.
Yes. Now, would that it were just a joke, next to the Del Mar Theater, where you can ask Officer Pam Bechtel or some of the hosts who are working there, whether that such a, there's a plan to, you can put it in a positive light, restore organized music that is responsible, tuneful, and, employment opportunity-ful to Santa Cruz. Because I know in the past, those the proposals to put sort of paid mariachis out there to drive, maybe to improve the tone of the downtown, no pun intended, has happened. But you might find out if anything is like that. You can also go, and I suggest this to any good listeners out there, because I don't have the time or the stamina to do it. You can go to meetings of the Downtown Association and or the Downtown Management Corporation. Both of these groups has an office across from the Coffee Roasting Company on the second floor, right next to, I think it's Plaza Books and Paper Visions or whatever it's called there, near Starbucks.
Well, and we'd like to head it off before it becomes a fate, as they say,
fait accompli. You can actually go up to the office of the Downtown Association and ask the secretary, or ask, Keith Holtaway, who's the executive director right now, what's going on? Is such a thing afoot? And he may or may not be candid with you, because I suspect if anything is afoot, it's coming from the Downtown Association and the Downtown Management Corporation, which is the group that runs the hosts, the pests, as I sometimes call them, the people in purple who walk around and tell you don't sit here, don't sit there.
Well, let's be charitable.
The eyes and ears of the Santa Cruz Police Force.
Well, I'd like to get it out to our listeners that there seems to be something about this. We will find out.
I appreciate
you calling.
Thereby
we can maintain, our freedom of expression and freedom of speech and song
also,
in public places.
Well, I know that you're also, you are actually a guest, Greg, if I can dare reveal your name, at the last show, and you did a fine version of the first three verses of Downtown. We're expecting a return performance for the last two verses.
Oh, those are censored.
Well, perhaps so, but we are not going to do an indie media on you and censor you that way, nor will we decide you're not a member of our group, as the Free Radio Santa Cruz did. So what we're going to do instead is invite you to come back. And also, I guess, we have planned to do a kind of a cop watch training for street performers, 6:30 on Wednesday night in front of New Leaf Market. And folks should be aware of that. I should remember that. You should call me the day before to make sure I don't forget.
Yes, to waken you up.
Please do.
Out of your drunken
stupor. I'm going to space it out. I'm getting old and tired, I'll tell you. So, that's something people can get into. If they're interested in learning different suggestions for dealing with police who show up, who knows, maybe we'll have some new satirical songs like Downtown at that event, which happens, the SAFE event, of course, happens every Wednesday from 6 to 10, thereabouts. So there.
Well, thank you very much, Robert, and to your beautiful guest, Bob. Peace and love, and aloha.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So you now have a chance to call in. Phone lines open, 427-3772. I noticed there's a special meeting of the City Council on November 15th. That's Tuesday, day after tomorrow. It's going to be meeting at 7 o'clock and will be cablecast. It's a presentation with no oral communications, but you can address the community on a presentation on La Bahia by Barry Swenson. That's a proposed development in the Beach Flats. So if you're interested in checking that out, special meeting of the City Council day after tomorrow, 7 o'clock, and it's going to then adjourn to the next meeting of the regular City Council session is going to be at 3 o'clock the week after on November 22nd, and the oral communications normally at 7 o'clock in the evening will be held at 5 o'clock in the evening, we hope, depending on when Rotkin wants to move it to. He's our mayor, and he will be going out as mayor. Coming in as mayor will be a new person voted in by the City Council itself. They do that at the evening session. I suspect Cynthia, God help us, Matthews will be coming in. Cynthia does some good work for Planned Parenthood. I wish she'd only stuck to Planned Parenthood, frankly. She's been responsible for setting up parking meters all over town. She's been on the bad end of almost every vote I can imagine. She was the only person voting against Free Radio Santa Cruz in the 90s, although she changed later and came on board, supported Free Radio in a vote by the City Council. I got to acknowledge that. But she's been on bad votes around the sleeping ban, bad votes around closing off public spaces, bad votes on closing the police review board. Bad, bad, bad. This woman is on the other side of the issues as far as I'm concerned. And she also doesn't return her phone calls. So that's another problem with the City Council members. Ed Porter, I want to point out, who didn't return my phone calls for 5 years, suddenly in the course of 3 weeks returned 3 phone calls. My commendation to Ed Porter, finally acting, at least in that capacity, like a public servant, which he is supposedly supposed to be. And I'm glad that that's happening in that regard. I'm going to turn now to a couple more interviews, and you'll be able to hear more of this silly stuff from the streets, unless Bob has something he wishes to inject at this point.
Well, I was just going to comment on your last statement that we get so little out of the City Council when it comes to actual doing anything about the hot topic issues that has inspired us after being lied to, sidetracked, held a carrot to, but not being able to get it, asking just for a little dog bone of something to help the homeless and not being able to get it. That's one of the reasons we're putting this event on, to try to open up some critical space or some space for critical analysis that will actually lead to some actions that will positively affect the community here in Santa Cruz.
Right. So in other words, it's not the City Council that's going to do shit. It's the community, which is, of course, something we've always known. The City Council will eventually consider doing something down the road. Even people who are activists somewhat outside their City Council roles. Let's look at Christopher Crone. He was mayor in 2002. And a lot of people have a soft spot in their heads or their hearts for Christopher Crone. I'm not sure. In their hearts, I suppose. Crone has, as you know, he's been a reporter at the Democratic and Republican National Conventions. He spoke up strongly on behalf of neighborhood rights and the right of the public access to the beaches and against the Seaside Company and the Beach Boardwalk down in San Diego a month or two ago. Bruce Bratton writes about it in his online column. Thank you, Christopher, for doing that. He has spoken on behalf of musical venues. He's spoken against the city manager, Dick Wilson, city manager for life, in terms of some of the decisions he's made after he was out of office, of course, after Christopher Crone was no longer on the Santa Cruz City Council. I wrote, a piece once called Two Cheers for Christopher Crone, which was an attempt to suggest that, you know, I'm glad he's saying what he's saying, but when is he going to address the stuff that he's, you know, the bad record he created at City Council? I know about this personally, of course, because I was arrested by Christopher Crone. I was arrested in 2002 for making a stop acting like a bunch of fascists salute to the city council, and it was a false arrest. It was prompted by Councilmember Fitzmaurice, who was trying to enforce decorum rules. They were trying to intimidate me without an arrest. I refused to be intimidated, so they arrested me instead, held me in jail, released me, and then had to face the fact that they had disrupted their own meeting and instead tried to scapegoat me with that claim. It's not what I'm being tried for on the 12th, which is a subsequent disruption, which has to do with Rotkin's five-minute rule on speaking at city council, which is another matter. Anyway, Crone is going to be going to depositions at the end of the month on this issue. I keep talking about this, and it keeps getting put off, but it's going to happen because he's being sued as well as the city in federal court on this issue, not just for me to get a pile of money, which would be nice, but for them to change their rules at city council so that we can actually get the kind of homeless issues that Bob is talking about, at least on the city council agenda. Usually, to do that right now, you need to get a city council member to do it, and even when you do, you're likely to get short shrift if they want to cut back your speaking time. City council is not treating members of the public well, and maybe this is no secret and no surprise. Maybe we should understand that unless you're part of the ruling power, you shouldn't have any right to be treated well. Obviously, if you believe in the theory of democracy, that's wrong, and you want to change that. That's what this lawsuit is about. Crone, I ran into him on the street yesterday or the day before, and he actually pulled me aside a week or two ago saying, well, let's talk about this deposition. And I was interested in doing that and also interested in interviewing him on the air about just some of his recent political activities. The problem, of course, is that when you try to hold him down to these issues, when you try to make him accountable, frankly, he's worse than Rotkin. Rotkin is a man who at least will show up and talk to you on issues. Crone seems to be a guy who you can't get him to give you a straight. He'll give you an answer that shifts and shifts. And I don't know if this is a function. I'm not trying to be personal with Christopher. I'm trying to say that is this what happens to people who go to the city council, go through the city council process? Maybe it's just me. Maybe people just find me too horrific to talk to, or their reputations are challenged. I don't know. It could be my breath. Maybe that's the idea. I'm chewing some gum. I'm hoping that this will alleviate it. Anyway, the Public Safety Committee, for those who are interested, that's the committee that oversees the police, fire, and I guess doesn't oversee parks and rec, but if you have a police issue where people are being harassed because of ranger activity, you might want to also mention it to them. It's a subcommittee that's composed of Rotkin, Porter, and Ryan Coonerty. Its next meeting will be November 21st, Monday at 4 o'clock at the City Council. So if anybody's interested, check that out. Monday, 4 o'clock, November 21st. That's down the road a piece. You should be aware that, like all the other City Council committee meetings, they hold oral communications last. You have to sit through their entire meeting before they will give you a chance to speak. And this used to be different, but I think they found that people came to talk to them and they didn't want to hear them, so they decided the best way to deal with this is put them at the end of the meeting, and they have to get, really have calluses on your butt to be able to wait for this to happen. So check them out if you want. November 21st, 4 p.m., Public Safety Committee. I'm also interested in hearing from activists around medical marijuana. That's an issue we talk a lot about. There's been, of course, a San Francisco action which extends the moratorium on medical marijuana clubs, any new medical marijuana clubs, for another year or another 18 months. And I was hoping perhaps to hear from some marijuana activists. I know Anita Henry, who has occasionally been my co-host, has been feeling under the weather, so she's not really been available, and she may not be available today, but if she's listening in and feels like it, then please call in. And she's a call-in number here for those who want information, 427-3772. There's an article. I'm looking at the... Here we go. Let's go back to the San Francisco Bay Indie Media. Here's the Chronicle's article. That's an older one. That's May 18th. one of the problems with viewing Google is you find a lot of old stuff and not much. Looks like maybe the FCC is visiting us. Perhaps we're going to be raided on a Sunday. No such luck. But the guy is he's wearing a business suit. I may have to arrest him anyway. Let's just see here. I'm looking for the... Now, we got old stories on the pot club moratorium. I'm going to have to come back to you on this. While I'm searching through the archives, we're going to hear a bit from some other interviews. And, of course, we'll hear from you if you call in, 427-3772.
Court is the notorious Hot Rod, also known as?
John Rapport.
What are you in court for, Hot Rod?
Eight different infractions, like blocking a sidewalk, trespassing on railroad property, camping, I call it surviving, one open container, which was a can of Rockstar that she interpreted as some kind of alcohol, which isn't true, and things like that.
Now, when we last talked to you, you were given some sort of order to go check yourself into the vet's hospital for a psychiatric reconditioning
evaluation.
Did you do that?
No, not yet, because I've been busy getting them all together and trying to survive on the street.
Now, I know you also complained recently that the police had confiscated your property and that you were, you were down to one bike full of stuff or less.
It's worse. The street people have stolen another couple of bags off of me, backpacks, and with all my medicine and my bicycle. And I'm just really just sick and tired of being done in to where you can't even maintain. I had to sleep on a sidewalk in front by the Cafe Benet and got in a ride here. It sucks. The whole
You're a public defender.
I don't get one. Not with infractions.
Well, you're defending yourself.
I'm going to have to, yeah. Not guilty, actually.
So what court are you in front of? The name of the judge?
I'm a lady. I don't know where...
Heather Morris, perhaps.
Yeah. And I got to go back in a few minutes, so...
Have you actually appeared before, or have you just been waiting in the court up to now?
Waiting, yeah.
And what's on the calendar for today? Just sort of you have to show up again to give her the... Are you looking for trial, or is it trial today, or is it you're going to set a trial date?
I guess they're going to set a trial date.
You might ask if you can sleep in the back of the courtroom, since you can't sleep legally anywhere else in the city.
I might just hang myself off in the river someplace. It's very fatiguing. It's pathetic. It gets demonstrative, and it just never stops, because a policeman woke me up this morning on the side of the street, you know, and it's embarrassing. It's just ridiculous that I've dwindled down into a position in my life to where I'm very grateful I'm sort of trying to stay alive.
So where and how did this awakening happen?
Over there by the cafe is right out off the main street, but there's no place to go.
Which cafe?
Benet. It's just, you know, because my friend...
Who was the police officer?
The London guy, Matt...
Officer Brandt.
Brandt, yeah.
What did Officer Brandt tell you?
He says, Rappaport, get up, you know, take your shoes and your shit and get out of it and don't come back. Something like that.
And your response was...
I says, he knows. I don't have no response. I'm just blank. I'm blank.
What time did he do this?
It was about 9 o'clock, and then my bags were thrown out in the middle of the street. I don't know who did that.
Well, it's not illegal to sleep at 9 o'clock. After 8:30, they got nothing on you. You're kind of sleepy here.
I'm very sleepy, and I'm tired, and I'm just not... feeling good. It's just a bad emotional disheartening, and you just have to go through it and maybe go down to Santa Barbara or someplace else, because this isn't the answer. Santa Cruz just hasn't been right by me, and since 89 I've had to live out of vehicles, off the street, however I could, and I'm just getting so to where I don't know if I want to continue. I have to leave here. There's no other answer other than...
Well, join the club. We're all fucking...
Yeah.
I want to leave Santa Cruz, too. Let me in the club.
Come to Yalapa, Mexico, man. Wait till John Kerry gets elected president.
I want to go to Mexico. I want to go anywhere. Get me out of Santa Cruz, man.
So we also have at the table a Leather Lungs Jim Purcell. Again, as I mentioned earlier, a mainstay or certainly a strong voice for the right to sleep or camp somewhere legally in Santa Cruz.
And the right to do a lot of other things, like live in peace, unmolested by incompetent
gun-wielding thugs?
No, don't put words in my mouth. Incompetent, discourteous, bestial, local, municipal Santa Cruz City police officers who have the audacity to insult a Marine who they've got down with his legs crossed. They're armed. I'm not. And when I revealed to him that I'd served honorably in the Marine Corps, he said, "Oh, you're one of those dickheads. Mr. Brierley, you will apologize to the Commandant of the Marine Corps and every soldier in Iraq for that ridiculous, disgusting comment, and you will pay with your job for it. And we will all be sleeping better."
This is Officer Dan Brierley.
I don't know his first name. I know his last name.
Chunky fellow with blonde hair.
Yes. So,
what were the circumstances under which this happened?
Well, that's neither here nor there. I don't want to discuss the case because it would prejudice the case. I will have him in civil court one day before the statute of limitations. Just before he goes on vacation, I will metaphorically hit him over the head with a hickory baseball bat.
Were you actually prosecuted for this case, or was it simply a harassment situation?
It was neither harassment nor prosecution. It was disrespect to the fine institution of the United States Marine Corps, which maintains the domestic tranquility. If I may hum a few bars for you, Mr. Brierley, if the Army and the Navy ever look on heaven's seen, you will find your white fat ass will be protected by the United States Marine Corps.
Unfortunately, Brierley and I, though we disagree on many subjects, probably agree on this one subject, but I can respect your right to disagree. Jeremiah, you're going to a hearing tomorrow.
And I'm a bit behind the time, so that's sort of an earlier interview with Hot Rod. And I actually believe he went to court again on Friday. I haven't heard a report from him. He's also known as John Rapport. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, and www.freakradio.org. In the studio, we have a peace activist giving an update on, I guess, an event that happened on, what was it, Friday night?
It was Friday night at 7:30 at the Vets Hall. They had an all-day series of events in the Vets Hall on Veterans Day, on talking about various issues. And one of the last events they had was this guy was Ralph Schoenman, who also does a radio show with Maya Schoen. He has a website called tickingaim.info, and he has a rather interesting viewpoint on what's behind some of the terrorism that we've been experiencing in Iraq and also in London and other places, and even 911. And his thesis is that a lot of these terrorist attacks, so-called terrorist attacks, are actually false flag operations conducted by intelligence agencies. And he gave one example of what went wrong in Iraq when two British undercover military people were arrested by the Iraqi police. And they ended up, because the undercover people were dressed as Iraqis and were driving a car laden with explosives, driving it into Basra, and they were intercepted by the Iraqi police, and they were ultimately taken to the Iraqi police station, and there was a serious conflict erupted around whether these people should be detained by the Iraqi police or not. And ultimately what happened was the British stormed the police station with about 10 tanks and just crushed the police station and freed the two British agents. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And he also points out in his talk, he kind of went into a little bit about how the London bombing may be actually another false flag operation, that actually there's some evidence in some of the publications that are published in Great Britain that some of the acts that are attributed to the Irish Republican Army actually were produced by the SAS, which is part of the British Secret Service, that they actually were responsible for perpetrating these acts and then blaming the IRA for them. And in similar line, he's saying that it's possible that the London bombings, the train station bombings, were actually a false flag operation of a similar character. But anyway, I was just, over the last couple of days, taking a look at his website. It's called takingaim.info, and he has a lot of interesting stuff on there. The relevant piece that's on his website, if you look at the audio files, there's files of past shows on the upper left of the main page, and then you look for Caught in the Act, Stage Terror in Iraq. It's a one-hour audio program which will lay out all the details about what I've been talking about, including the hypothesis that actually al-Zarqawi, who is the al-Qaeda mastermind allegedly operating in Iraq currently and behind the Jordan bombings, he may actually have been dead for the last 2 years, according to what this guy is saying. He has, at the Vets Hall, he went into a little more detail about the fact that he actually reviewed some of the video footage that alleges to show al-Zarqawi and pointed out that al-Zarqawi actually lost a leg a couple of years ago, right before he allegedly died. And the videos, subsequent to that, the videos show a man with intact limbs. So it's kind of strange. Anyway, that's what's been going on with me lately.
And of course, we're talking with John Teelking. Hey, John. You're moving around the area. I know you moved out of Santa Cruz. Now you're kind of visiting. You're a human rights organization activist, right?
Yeah, I'm with the human rights organization. What happened was I got a job in Morgan Hill, and so I decided to move to San Jose because it's cheaper and easier to find a place over there, and also because it's closer to where I work. But now I may be getting a job in Monterey, so I may decide to move to someplace like Watsonville so I can actually be in Santa Cruz County still and carry on as before.
You're also notorious as the best-dressed peace activist in town, the man in black who shows up in a black suit and tie at the Peace Fridays, right?
Right.
So for those of you who want to target him, don't go after me, go after him. Let's have a little music here.
There's summies don't care when they put down the plate. There's a sound, not with weight. When they move a chair, it'll scrape with a grate on the ground.
Not with me.
I will have my hand right when I place the glass. Notice how I stand right as customers pass. Serve a demi-pass with a gesture so gentle, or do it again till it's near oriental. Be a fine waitress to see that you pleasure each guest. There's a twist to my wrist if I let a fork drop or cut up a pork chop or serve a New York chop. It all needs to be stylish and smart. That's what makes it an art. I remember one day, as I do now and then, I had shakes and down I went. There with my tray full of 7 prime tenderloin steaks. Down I went. But I kept my poise, not one guest heard me fall. Never made a noise, not one noise, food and all. If you have to crawl, you give them what they like. You carry your tray like it's almost ballet-like. La 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 la. It's an art, it's an art. To be a fine waitress, each evening I treasure the test. For my chef may be deaf, I stay diplo, automatic. If I give him static, he might burn the haddock or put too much salt in a tart. Even that is an art. Tips are important for people like captains and barmen. For them, it's a tipsy. For me, I'm a gypsy, just toss me a coin, and I suddenly feel like I'm Carmen. Approaches, the curtains descend. There among the roaches, my act's at an end. Every night I tend to find myself crying. There's no work so trying or so satisfying. I tell everybody that I'm a waitress and I'm proud. Somebody comes up to me and says, hey, you're terrific. How come you're just a waitress? You know what I say to them? I say, why? Don't you think you deserve to be served by me? It's an art. It's an art to be a great waitress, to do without leisure or rest. So I zoom through the room with a flair no one else has, an air no one else has, I swear. No one else has my lilt when I say, all aboard! You can see it gives me a glow. Every time I prove I'm a pro. Maybe I'm not quite Michelangelo, but I'm not just a waitress. I'm a woman.
Protest group up at the top because they had all of their, and I got the banjo up because I thought the banjo was appropriate. So I played Bobby Dylan's Masters of War while they were waving their banners. And there I did have a few honks.
When was this?
That, like, they played until about 7, almost 6:30.
And where, this was here at the Veterans Hall? Or?
At, over here.
Oh, the anti-war group in front of the theater, Cinema 9.
I thought that was very nice to do for the Veterans Day celebration.
Dig it.
I would say that was probably the more highlight of the night on the mall. I can't imagine anything else being any more exciting than that.
How many performers were there?
Well, I was the only one that was playing the banjo and singing protest music because I think nobody else was there. They didn't know that there was anything happening. So it was just like all the others were. There were about 10 to maybe at least 10 people out there with the signs just standing there doing a silent vigil.
Any war sign.
Yes, they left.
It's against the Iraqi occupation.
Yes, they seemed to be very happy that I came. And I definitely gave it my all.
Well, keep it up. Thanks, Sue.
You're welcome. That was good.
So, Sue, you also said that there's no particular harassment you've noticed, although the hosts have.
No, I've been very mellow. I haven't been singing a lot of war protest songs. I haven't been singing really loud like otherwise they probably would.
But you did play the banjo a couple hours ago for the anti-war rally up the street across from the Cinema 9.
And no cops that came and told me I couldn't. And I was definitely playing Masters of War in my most emotional level I could.
And you were also, you took a look at the Vets Hall, but it was kind of a slow go today. Not many people in the audience.
It could have been a really great get-together if people would have responded and come. And because it was all set up, the stage for microphones, for music, and actually there were some good musicians there, but there weren't a lot of people coming to just, be there and maybe join in the celebration and the peace celebration that was supposed to be happening. And it's too bad because it really could have been a great time for people to get together. People are not getting together. They should be getting together, and they should be getting together in groups and starting to really feel each other as a group, because we're there. We're all there together, but we're not, get together because we're not coming and being where we should be, and we'll feel better if we do inside ourselves, because I think people aren't feeling very good right now.
Not to mention kick out the assholes in Washington as well.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that most of us are in general agreement about.
Yep, that's
but
true.
But it's just that we're all very frustrated, and we really would feel a lot better if we were putting ourselves in a place where we could all gather together and then come out of it feeling like we're not alone and we're together as people. You know, and that could have happened.
Thank you, Sue.
You're welcome.
And we aren't going to be able to go past one today because we have another programmer coming into the studio. I'm going to play a little bit of the Office of Compassionate Use discussion with Mike Rotkin from the last city council meeting. And I'm going to put off further discussions of Richard Quigley's wake, which you can read about in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. And you'll be hearing more about from me. I did some interviews there. I think it's also a place where B.E. Smith, who's a legendary activist from Northern California, went to jail for 24 months in a federal prison for growing medical marijuana. We're going to hear an interview with him. That'll be happening probably on Thursday, maybe next Sunday. The show comes back 6 o'clock on Thursday evenings. So let's hear a little bit of the Office of Compassionless Uselessness, as I like to call it, or the non-office, since there's no office. It's just a dummy measure that's designed to support the WHAM lawsuit, but actually has nothing to do with providing access to medical marijuana locally. I've talked about this before, but here's a little of the latest from Tuesday.
And here's a replay of the City Council's afternoon session, the segment of item 13, the Office of Compassionate Use.
Sure. All right. Next, we have an ordinance, item number 13, related to adding a chapter 6.92 to the Santa Cruz Municipal Code and creating a compassionate use program to ensure that the seriously ill citizens of Santa Cruz have access to medical marijuana. This is brought to us as a second reading. However, it's come to my attention that there are a number of, I think not large, but more or less technical changes that we might want to make to this ordinance. I talked to John Bersoni about this, and he has, I believe, copies of this.
We're going to actually bring it to the next meeting. We're just going to adopt this ordinance today so we can get it finally adopted, and then we have one cleanup provision, but it has to amend both the current ordinance and the new ordinance. So we figured it was just cleaner to come back with a cleanup.
At a later time. So at this point, the recommendation
through
the TICO is just to adopt this for final. So I apologize to the member of the press who I spoke to earlier with a different version of what we were doing here. And so let me explain briefly what we're doing. This is on a second reading. The City Council is proposing that we would establish an Office of Compassionate Use as a city function in the city of Santa Cruz. The ordinance makes very clear that we will not carry this out until we get declaratory relief from the federal courts. What we're trying to do is clarify a contradiction that exists between California state law, where medical marijuana is legal under Proposition 215 and a number of other state ordinances or laws, but the federal government announces that they will arrest and perhaps seize the property of anyone who tries to actually distribute medical marijuana. We'd like to clarify what the law actually says about this rather than exist in this contradiction. And so we believe that the clearest resolution of this issue would be to have the federal courts rule on the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, sometimes known as the States' Rights Amendment, that basically says that the federal government should not be passing legislation on matters that have, in which the Constitution doesn't give them authority, that those matters should be left to the states. And we believe that a much clearer case can be brought in front of the courts if, in fact, it's a city that intends to distribute this as an arm of the state of California rather than simply a private party regulated by the city. So at this point, we have no intention of immediately opening this office. We really want to get the federal courts to declare what the law is. It's an untenable situation to be in where the state attorney general tells us medical marijuana is legal, but the DEA and the federal authorities tell us that it's illegal and that people will be arrested if they try and have their property seized if they try and distribute this in terms of meeting people's medical needs. I also want to add really clearly that this is about medical marijuana. This is not about recreational use. The issue here for us, I think, as a council, we'll see how people vote on this, but the issue is whether people who have serious medical needs, as determined by a doctor, should have access to the medicine of that marijuana can provide, particularly for people that are going through chemotherapy and other kinds of problems that in which it's pretty clear to a lot of people, and particularly to a lot of doctors, that this is an efficacious medicine that people should have access to. This ordinance was passed on a first reading.
You know, and rather than play through that whole thing, which involves me, Michael Tomasi, Andrea Tischler, I think one other person, giving what Free Radio Santa Cruz listeners probably have already heard in terms of my critique. I mean, my critique is does nothing to establish any local office, which they could open tomorrow under state law, or they could pass a tax and regulate measure for marijuana generally, which would encourage other cities to do so, though that couldn't go into immediate force, as Andrea Tischler and others have asked that do, like Oakland has done, or they could change their own medical marijuana zoning law. None of these are under consideration. So it's, as far as I'm concerned, this measure is a hoax. John, here, take a minute to give your update on demonstration, perhaps ongoing in front of the Nickelodeon. Hold it, John. I'm realizing your mic was turned down. Start again. Well, my apologies.
Okay. I was in front of the Nickelodeon from about 11 or 11:30 until 12, joining the women in black who were, I guess they were relegated to the class of counter demonstrators because they had a almost equal size demonstration that was in favor of the wall, the Palestinian wall that separates the Palestinians from the Israelis. They had a movie called they were showing it, sponsored by the Resource Center for Nonviolence, that was shown there called the Concrete Curtain. And basically, it was a pretty peaceful demonstration there. There was only one person that started getting kind of agitated and had to escort him inside the theater, you know, so he wouldn't cause a problem. But
that was a person who was in favor of the wall, against the wall?
I think it was somebody who was against the wall.
And it was the infamous Becky Johnson at this demonstration. We want to know his association.
Yeah, Becky Johnson
continuing.
Was there about noon or so with her video camera. I didn't see anything to her on the video camera, but she was interviewing the pro-wall people. I have my sign, Don't Bomb Iraq or Anyone Anymore, which kind of addresses both sides, I believe, because I don't think anybody should be bombing each other.
Well, thank you, John. And who knows, that may still be happening at the Resource Center, the Nickelodeon, even as we speak. Looking at the medical marijuana situation here on the Safe Access Now website.
You got a call.
Looks like I've got a call. Let's callers come first, I'm afraid. Hi, you're on Free Radio, hopefully.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson calling in.
Hey, Becky, you're calling from the site of the Nickelodeon protest?
Yes, I'm down at the Nickelodeon where the protest against the Resource Center for Nonviolence is going on.
Uh-huh.
And but I really called because as I was listening on the radio on the way in, I heard Theodora call in. And she sort of gave out a piece of misinformation on the air, and I wanted a chance to correct it.
Okay, be advised, Bob's coming in at 1, so talk fast.
What?
The show is going to be cut off at 1 o'clock when someone comes into the studio. We got 5 minutes, so roll.
Okay. The misinformation I want to correct, she said that I was accused of providing the name of a free radio programmer to a disputed website. And that's not true. The first time that I even saw the website, this programmer's name was already up on the website. The only information that I ever provided or that anyone has ever even suggested I provided was to correct misinformation where this programmer was listed as being a male and I said that this programmer is indeed a female. That's the only information. And did you, I don't know, I didn't hear whether you got a chance to read my response to the...
I read some of it.
Uh-huh.
I read some of it. I made my own commentary, and I believe Bob and I commented on it, too. We felt it was inappropriate that, you know, we said what we said before, which is that Free Radio and Indie Media are acting inappropriately in this matter, and also I also criticized you to some extent for not adopting a different approach to them that might have led to a different result. But, you know, that's my view.
Uh-huh. Well, I pointed out that this programmer who I supposedly provided personal information about, the person's gender, that this person is also a TV show host and a radio show host and should be considered just as much a public figure, if I'm a public figure, and able with the looser standards for discussion and public forums, then this information about this person's gender would hardly constitute anything that would be private or personal or would cause any harm to this individual. You got that?
I got that, although I know that she felt otherwise, so that was...
Well, she felt that I provided the person's name, and she wasn't aware that this person has
I mean,
the same
Becky,
status as a public figure as
Becky,
I do. If I'm a public figure,
hold
so
it,
is
hold
she.
It, Becky, I don't mean Theodora. I mean the person whose name we're talking about felt otherwise, so that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Right, so that was the point.
She felt threatened or fearful, but I don't know that she explained why the fact that my involvement, maybe she felt fearful about having her name up on Horowitz's website. I don't blame her for feeling that way, but I had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, the concern was that in making a correction, you were, instead of doing absolutely
yes,
nothing,
right.
That was
but
the concern.
But you see, Theodora didn't say I made a correction. Theodora right. said that I provided her name to the website.
Correct. I don't think
and then she
right.
said that caused her great concern. I would like, if that is the only thing that I'm accused of doing, I would like at least for it to be accurate what I actually did.
I understand,
did.
And I thank you for clarifying the record on that. Anything else?
Just that I'm very, very disappointed that I'm not going to be allowed to attend the Indie Media meeting tonight. I'm not sure that the decision of a subcommittee of, I think, three people is sufficient to ban a person from the meeting. I would think that that would require a motion from the general meeting. So I would encourage people to attend this meeting and to at least, I thought I was going to have a hearing with this editorial subcommittee where I could lay down my case and that they could actually bring up something of their case against me. But even in this long letter, note that there was not a single reference to anything I have ever written, posted, or for that matter, said on Free Radio Santa Cruz that was challenged or used as an example of why they've taken this extreme measure to block my, first censor me repeatedly, block my IP address, leave up all kinds of character assassination messages on the Indie Media website, and now ban me from their meeting.
John has a comment, Becky.
Yeah, I got a comment. I still haven't finished my analysis of all of the articles that are written by Becky Johnson on the Indie Media website, but just doing a search and looking at the results, it appears that there's only like four or five articles on Israel-Palestine that actually show up in a search, and those are kind of towards the bottom of the list.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a little bit suspicious to me as, you know, maybe someone went through and eliminated some of them.
Yeah,
you know,
John,
some of the other ones.
You were at that last Indie Media meeting with me. Did you observe me in that three-hour meeting yelling at any point?
No, I heard you arguing with people talking off topic, but I didn't hear you yelling at anyone.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for calling in, Becky. Anything else?
If people want to come down to the Nickelodeon. There's still people here, and they can get some literature about the movie The Concrete Curtain that the RCMV is putting out, and literature that explains why this barrier, which, by the way, is only 5% wall and 95% fence, why Israel doesn't have a right to protect its citizens from suicide bombers.
Thanks, Becky.
Sure.
Bye-bye. And the Indie Media meeting tonight is at 7 o'clock at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. If you want to get involved with Indie Media or you want to express your concerns about this latest banning and the requirements Indie Media is making that Becky Johnson disassociate herself from DAFCA website and another website, and that she publicly makes statements to that effect. John?
I've got a site called pagesincolor.com, and my section called The Opposition, it only has two entries right at the moment, but I think I should add a few, you know, just so people can actually look at what the opposition is doing instead of trying to Google for something that they can't find, you know, but whatever.
We have a caller. Hi, caller, you're on Free Radio, I hope.
Hi, yeah, it's Babson. I'm just wondering, remember what happened to Pacifica Radio when all the right-wingers infiltrated and tried to shift the force of where it was going? I don't know all the specifics of who's in the media, but...
It's actually the corporate deal with Pacifica is it's still fight. The fight is still going on when Mandel and others were discharged and Amy Goodman was kicked out. And it was
right.
Kind of the vanillaizing of Pacifica. And still, the fight is still continuing, actually.
Yeah, well, you know, it needs to be heads up for everybody in every area and to keep your goals at a higher level, check people's backgrounds. And when you see this subtle screening out, do need to question, and it is important, like they're saying, to for both sides of the story to be stated. And like that the TV station out of Monterey, the guy with the mustache, I mean, he never has the alternate view. It's always his right-wing approach to everything, and like medical marijuana. Well, my best friend in high school was the sixth person on the planet to have chemo, and let me tell you, the marijuana was needed for her. And to associate medical marijuana for people like that to like the degradation of the kids in Santa Cruz, it's all choices, and it starts with self-image, and that's a long stitch to make. And so in my direction, I think, should go down to the TV station, too. Hey, you know, have the prowess, please, to have both sides stated.
Indeed. I think we've had at least seven sides from you today, Madison. I appreciate your calling.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm just
No
yeah,
problem.
Also with the drugs and who's selling the drugs, you know, find
right.
out if it's a drug
I got
dealer,
a roll.
Or is it the government?
Yep.
Maybe, because I think back to the
we'll
70s
talk more.
It was a lot safer
Bye-bye.
When the drug dealers had it.
Sorry, I really have to cut people off because I am at the end of my time. Thank you for calling in. Thanks for all our callers, pro and con, and in the middle and on the top and on the bottom, calling in. I'll be coming back to continue this show or to do another version of it, assuming that my Indie Media address is not revoked. Actually, no, it has nothing to do with Indie Media. I'll be coming back on Thursday between 6 and 8. I encourage you to check out the Huff meeting at 8:30 in the morning at the county building, which is right at the coffee cart, right outside the metal detector, so you can keep your pistol with you. Or maybe you can keep your gun, but you know, keep your pistol in your pants or something. In any case, depending on your gender, you're welcome at the Huff meetings. And if you want to check the Huff website, we are still hoping to have it updated at huffsantacruz.org. That's where you can go. Also, the show is archived there in case you want to review all the sordid details. I apologize for the lengthy, kind of somewhat specific discussions of... the Indie Media versus Becky Johnson story. It's not just because Becky is the producer of this show, or one of them. I also help produce. I'm a producer as well as a babbler. But it's because it's an issue. It's an issue that's important in our community, and it's important because it doesn't just simply relate to one person. It relates to all of us. So it sounds like it's either the FCC or perhaps it's the FUCK at the door. And I'm afraid that if somebody is trying to bring a bicycle into the station in violation of policy, I may have to contact the Central Collective on this issue. But until that happens, I'm going to sign off with this last number from Working. Enjoy it, and I'll be back on Thursday. In the meantime, give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF.
What I could have been... I could have been something. If what I could be had been left to be, I would have been something. A tower of strength, a center of power, at $10 an hour.
could have done, what I could have done. I could have done a big thing, some luck to do. I wanted to, I would have done big things. Swam a few rivers, climbed a few hills, paid all my bills. Now it's just dreams that I'm stuck with. Hell, that ain't a lot to show. I haven't gone far from the starting line, but deep down inside, where it counts, fight on.